5 p.m. deadline for second reading budget amendments to House Bill 1. 5 p.m. deadline. Now, if you already have an amendment drafted and you think it's, you don't have to wait till after 5 to approve it. So that really helps the workflow. If you know you've got a pretty simple one, it's already done, you can go in there and sign off on it any time, and we kind of get that put to the back shelf. So with that, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 236.
House Bill 236, introduced by House Education. School Finance, Omnibus Education Funding, an act relating to school finance. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 236 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, what I've got here is an amendment that in effect will reinstate the half-cent sales tax once the LISRA drops below a half a billion dollars, or the $500 million, as this bill originally came out of the Education Committee. And so what it does, if you recall, we had passed the Summers Amendment, which had added an additional half-cent sales tax when the LISRA dropped below $750 million. So that passed. So this amendment deletes that amendment to make sure that that particular tax item is not back in play. And then it would also delete the Henderson second reading amendment, which took the 1/2 cent cushion out. And so again, as I've said from day one when we started this discussion, I felt strongly about the 4- or 5-prong approach to solving the education problem. And that begins with cuts, and I realize, initially we didn't have the cuts were there. As we look at the amendments, that as we've worked this bill, those cuts are up for the 18-19 school year. Those cuts are at that $80 million range, okay? Keep in mind, the 1/2 cent sales tax would come into play, again, when the LISRA drops below $500 million. And as we say with the projections right now, it's not on the radar. But it is a safety net there. And I realize some have argued we need to spend all of our savings accounts. But let me tell you one of the reasons I think this is necessary, and it comes from my being last year on the JAC. And we're funding our locals out of the LISRA. Okay, so you ask, why are we funding the locals? Well, one is we gave them about a 50%, which I don't call a haircut, that's a scalping, from a budget ago to this recent budget. But we are also using that to backfill when a prior body, I don't know if anybody is even still here, removed the sales tax off of food, which is a revenue source for our locals. Now, in my neck of the woods, whether I agree or disagree with how a municipality might be managed or that they could be managed better, the simple fact of the matter is, without that appropriation, without that funding mechanism, it's going to put small communities in a real hurt, okay? And I need to have you think about it. That is one of the reasons you use a LISRA. That's one of the reasons you use their savings account, not just all for education. So while we move forward and we debate this bill and we try to find the best bill possible for education in the state, I want you to keep in mind our amendments that we've done today have the cuts there. This is simply a safety net to make sure that we don't drain the LISRA all the way down without the consideration of the other needs that would come out of that particular rainy day fund. So with that, I'll be quiet. Ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Anyone for their first time? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reserving for my second.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. So we've had a lot of amendments that have dealt with these tax increases. And the body has taken the position up till now to remove these out of the bill. And I think it's important to remember that with the bill as it is, we're looking at either reductions or diversions from savings or other revenue streams, $320 million. Okay? And keep in mind, we're really focusing, this biennium is covered. Okay, that's what we have, the PLF holding account. We drained that thing last year. We used all the PLF holding account to take care of this biennium. And the biennium that we have, that $400 million shortfall for each year, is 2019 and 2020. So this is really what we're preparing for. We're preparing for later on down the line, before we even have had a budget. We haven't even had a budget. We're working on our supplemental budget for this biennium. So we haven't even worked on the next biennial budget, the 2019-2020 budget. And really, this is what we're preparing for, because we see the handwriting on the wall. And we see that we're going to have to make some hard decisions, whether that's cuts, diversions of savings, other revenue streams, taxes, you name it. And I think this bill so far takes a proactive approach and says, you know what, we're going to do some heavy lifting now. We're going to go ahead and make some reductions. We're going to go ahead and make some cuts. We're going to go ahead and divert some different monies. And I think right now to enter into the talk of taxes is premature because, again, we're way out. That's way out in front of us. Just as we had the discussion yesterday, our backup isn't up against the wall. In fact, if we were to actually have this tax in this bill, the tax likely wouldn't take effect for 4 to 5 years. But again, the question that I asked yesterday and the question that I ask you is, what do you think is going to be in the newspaper? What's the headline going to be? Okay, and I know that media, we shouldn't be afraid of the media. And I'm not saying being afraid of the media. But what I am saying is there's a perception that goes out to the public. And that perception is we are going to raise your taxes. And it's interesting. I was just talking to another legislator today, and we were talking about the oil and gas leases that are being sold today. They're here in one of this good city's hotels. $92 million. That's pretty good. That's in my Campbell or in my county and another county alone. $92 million. And that, think about that. That's good for oil. What happens if there's the threat of tax increases in the future? What do you think that company's going to do, or those companies are going to do? Will they take a sheltered approach? So I would ask you to vote no against this. You know, in a regular budget year, we have these increases in taxes. We'd be taking a roll call vote. And with that, I would call for the ayes and noes in this. Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Is there a second for the... Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Reserving a first for a second.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On the bill that you have before you on page 35, it's in the language, it's in there on 1, 2, and 3. It's looking for ways of new revenue. I think it's already in there. I don't believe that we need to add this. As I said yesterday, with what we've done, it's doing cuts of paper with all the taxes that we've done, and we're going to bleed the golden goose to death with the taxes that we're putting on. We may call them something else, but they're all tax increases. And I don't believe that we need to have another tax increase. Thank you. On and against the amendment.
Majority Whip Summers.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, thank you. And just remind everybody that really we want to look for a comprehensive solution for education. And yes, this tax would trip way out there. That's good. But we need to have something in place to buoy that LISRA as we go down this road. And I'll remind everybody, in a budget session, you know, to bring a revenue increase takes a two-thirds majority vote. It's, you know, that's a really, really tough hill to climb. And so I think it's reasonable at this time, you know, really there's a lot of projections out there. So we're putting in cuts out here that are in 18 and 19. We're trying to find a comprehensive solution, and certainly a piece of that solution should be a tax if our rainy day account drops to a certain level. And this is simply just putting back that piece, that half penny sales tax, when the LISR hits $500 million. And that's really when it, by the time we hit $500 million, that's, you know, we're getting down to some dire times. So honor and support of the amendment.
Representative Salazar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Again, I will reemphasize what I said yesterday when this was defeated. The tax may not occur for 4 or 5 years, but the decision is being made today. And I can assure you that in my rural district, my seniors, my retired vets, my constituents working two jobs, the single mom with two children in my district, they know what's happening here on the floor. Saying that this tax isn't going to occur for 4 or 5 years after it dips to $500 million, that doesn't mean anything to them. What does mean something to them is that today we are deciding whether or not to put a tax, a sales tax, a regressive tax, a tax that will affect my seniors, the single mom with two kids barely making ends meet, the family that's living from paycheck to paycheck are going to be facing a sales tax. I said it yesterday, I'll say it again today, I am not going to vote for a tax. I refuse. And my constituents made it very clear to me last summer when I was running, no new taxes. I get it. My district gets it. I refuse to vote for an increase in a sales tax or any tax with regard to this. I encourage you to listen to your constituents. I'm listening to mine. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good bringer of this amendment referred to the safety net. Well, after the safety net, there's a bailout, a built-in bailout. And I think that sound we're hearing is the LISR being chewed up so fast because there's a bailout at the end. There's a bailout at $500 million anyway. Safety net, bailout, vote no on the amendment.
Representative Flintner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker. I have vacillated on this so many times, you guys think I'm schizophrenic, I'm sure. But after a lot of thought and counsel and prayer, the only way I think this education deal works is if everybody comes to the table with something. And that means us, it means our educators, and it means the citizens of this state. And I've been a citizen of this state my entire life. I'm a generational citizen of this state and a product of severance taxes. We live off those taxes. I got that free education. My son got that free education. And so I feel like if we're going to ask our educators to make the necessary cuts, then we need to do something with regard to revenue. We need to do something. And I'm not giving up on the possibility of our minerals industry making a rebound. In fact, I believe that it will. But I think that right now we begin the task of trying to redistribute where our funds come for education. And so to make my decision, I come back to this. And I didn't sign a no new taxes pledge, but I did take an oath, and it said, I have been elected as a member of the House of Representatives of the state of Wyoming, and I do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Wyoming. And under Article 7, Section 1, it says, the legislature is to provide for public schools. And if that's not enough, you go to Section 9, taxation for schools. The legislature shall make such further provision by taxation or otherwise as with the income arising from the general school fund will create and maintain a thorough and efficient system of public schools adequate to the proper instruction of all youth of the state. And lastly, I go to the Supreme Court decision under Campbell 1, which states, because education is one of the state's most important functions, lack of financial resources will not be an acceptable reason for failure to provide the best educational system. All other financial considerations must yield until education is funded. Now, whether or not you believe in that decision, that is the decision that stands, and it even trumps our Constitution. So if you are a strict constitutionalist, I would suggest you adhere to what it states in our Constitution. It doesn't mean that we discontinue looking for other revenue streams. It doesn't mean that our work here ends. It just means that we're doing our part and we're bound by what it states here. I would urge you, please, to support this amendment and to support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Brown, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I just want to kind of go take a step back, go a day back here, and we heard a lot of discussion yesterday about the 2% sales tax that was originally brought out of committee and onto the floor with this and how that wasn't part of the five-part plan. And we heard a lot about that, that this just wasn't part of the plan and this was outside of the scope of the original bill and we just can't see ourselves doing that. Well, I'd subject this body to the understanding that we have now removed one of the legs by removing this out of here. And that white paper that was submitted before I swore into office here had this last piece on there that said, identify revenue enhancements that could offset revenue shortfalls. That was number five, ladies and gentlemen. We went out and we asked for comments on this paper. We received over 600 comments. Now, I'm not going to be the first one to sit there and scream that we can't make some cuts to education. But I'm also not going to be the one that kicks this can down the road and puts ourselves in jeopardy of spending all of our savings on education. We need to have a safety background on this. $500 million, you know, when you look at the LISRA, we had just shy of $2 billion in there 2 years ago. We now have $1.4 billion in there after it's all been profiled. We're spending through our savings like crazy already. So that's not going to last very long, guys. We have to really start to look at this. Kicking the can down the road and hoping for a better day and hoping that minerals returns just puts us right back in this exact same situation. We're not doing anything. If we're not willing to look at this, yes, what happens if all these minerals come back and it helps us? That's fantastic. But what happens in another 4 years if we don't have that capability again? We're going to be right back here deciding this exact same situation. Why don't we start looking at this now, have the safety net, which at this point has not been, not even projected that we're going to touch it, have the safety net in place just in case, and then we continue to look at the rest of the issues that we have started identifying for cuts, and we go into recalibration, and we start looking at these things. We heard a lot about it yesterday, that we had five parts, and this 2% tax was not part of one of those five parts, so we needed to knock it off. Well, now we had five parts, and we've removed those five parts, and now we're down to four. So there's a lot. I would encourage everybody to go back and look at the white paper and remember what the white paper was asking from everybody out there, all your constituents and all my constituents. We heard a lot of testimony on this. So on in support of this amendment. I think this is a great idea, and I think this puts it back into the original intent of what the House Education Committee brought this bill forward with these intentions. So on and again for this bill and for this amendment.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On this amendment, I urge you to resist this amendment and vote no. One of the five-part prongs that we keep talking about is cutting spending. I heard we're going to cut $30 million maybe the first year and maybe $90 million total in the next 3 years. We got to find ways to cut first, and that's what my constituents want.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I would like to point out something that one of the earlier speakers spoke to, and I think that it would behoove us, especially the new members, to think about this. We're doing this in a non-budget year because the bar is higher. When we're raising taxes, shouldn't the bar be higher? And I think our founders had that in mind when they had that idea of the budget session. It shouldn't be easy. And I just find it very telling as to why we're doing this. We're not in a hurry. We already have some money in place, and we have some savings in place, and we have some cuts, and we hopefully will have some new revenue from the extraction industry. So it just seems to me that there was some wisdom in that. Let's do it when the bar is higher so that if it's a really good idea, and it might be, I don't know, it might be, there might come a day. But today is not that day to raise taxes.
Representative Crank.
Thank you, Chairman, Speaker. I just have a few short things. I look at this thing as Wyoming goes down the road. We're all trust fund babies of the mineral industry. They've paid everything for us forever. Maybe it's not needed today, a 0.5% increase, but it is a safety net. And I'd rather be in a position where we're taking care of ourselves and looking for ourselves and not wishing somebody else would pay our bill for it. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Speaker Pro Tem. My comment on this is that we're talking about raising a tax possibly in 5 years or 4 years from now. And I don't really see a good reason why we have to do that today. The amount of money that would be generated by this 0.5% is about $80 million. And there's adequate money that is in our savings accounts to pay for this. Therefore, I think that this is really an unreasonable burden to put on our taxpayers. And I think that we should defer on this issue and vote this amendment down. Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Steinmetz, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. And just to read a little bit more out of one of the Campbell County cases, because that has driven a lot of what's going on with education today. And there was a quote made out of that, and ahead of this part, there's five things we're supposed to do, but it says, to summarize, considering all of these various factors, the legislature must first design the best educational system by identifying a proper educational package each Wyoming student is entitled to have. Whether she lives in Laramie or Sundance, the cost of that educational package must then be determined, and the legislature must then take the necessary action to fund that package. Because education is one of the state's most important functions, lack of financial resources will not be an acceptable reason for failure to provide for the best educational system. But we are the ones that get to decide what the best educational system is. That's what the model system is all about. And so there's more to the Campbell decision than one quote that can be taken out. And so I just would encourage us to resist this amendment. Let's make our cuts, and if we need to consider taxes in the budget session, then we can do it at that time. Thank you.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. So I have a couple perspectives that are colored by either my experience here or in the past. I'll start. I am newly a member of committee number 2, and it doesn't take long on that committee where you become a bloodthirsty budget cutter. It's just part of that job. And I am not shy about saying that is now what I do. And I agree, we need to be looking at how we're going to cut our spending on education. I am all for it. We need to be doing that at this time. But my other perspective is based on my 12 years in local government. And I think that will always be a factor in my thinking in this body. And in that job, one of the things we were always considering is when we're spending taxpayer money now, how to prevent having to spend significantly more money in the future for unanticipated disasters, whether they were related to structural failures in buildings, earthquakes, fires, floods, and we experienced a number of these. And I was always thankful when they happened that we had had the foresight to plan for those. We have a potential disaster looming here in terms of funding for education. I think we all agree on that. Sometimes we discuss this in terms of, well, we think possibly our revenues from the mineral industry will come back. I hope that happens. It may not. We are always thinking it's really good we have all these monies that we can get investment returns from. That doesn't always happen. I hope it continues to, but I believe it's 3 out of every 10 years those investments do not come in. I don't think it's prudent to delay a discussion about how we can provide for revenues down the road when, if we wait too long, it could be too late. On and in favor of this amendment.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and against the amendment for the bill, and I really want to be able to vote for this bill with the tax, I don't know. You know, and let me be clear, of the 7,500 classroom teachers in the state of Wyoming, I don't want to lay one of them off, and I don't want to cut the pay of one of them, period. However, the other 10,000 people in education that aren't in the classroom, I think we may have a little room there to consider some cutbacks. Again, leave the classroom teachers alone, but just look at other parts of the education and, frankly, other parts of government as a whole. We've been in a great recession for at least 2 years now here in Wyoming. Private sector companies have been cutting and cutting and cutting. And my emails and my folks back home won't stand for a tax increase at this point. Especially this one where it's going to be automatic 4 or 5 years from now. You know, if we have this automatic thing in there tied to our savings account, I'm afraid there'll be an effort to drain the savings even faster. So I'm going to ask you to vote no on this amendment and aye for the bill.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I reluctantly have to support this bill, although I realize that the sales tax is not really the appropriate tax for funding education, but it's the one that is easiest to close this 80-80-80 gap. And I base my support on this from the standpoint that we have to have a safety valve of some type, that is a contingency plan for when the LSR, before the LSRA goes to zero. I mean, what do you do if we end up in a place where we're totally broke? You know, years ago there was a story about a governor that just had a happy inauguration day, and he sat down at the desk over there where the Capitol is, and I think it was the auditor came in and he says, "Governor, we only got $100,000 in the general fund, and what should we do?" And the governor says, "Well, quit writing checks." And I don't have it quite right, but that's pretty close to what happened. And this is the kind of thing that this this contingency will help avoid that. We don't get to a point where we get to zero in that LSRA, and then we start wringing our hands and say, oh, we should have had something in place here. Now what are we going to do? I think this provides the safest way to assure that we have a revenue source and we have it identified prior to going to zero. You know, if in the meantime we come up with a more appropriate tax, we can pull this one off. And if in the meantime we have a rebound in industry, it's never going to happen anyway. You know, we're not voting for a tax that's going to take place today. It's a contingency tax that closes this system. So when we walk out of here, we have actually can honestly say we've got a plan to close up a $400 million hole. And I think that although it's going to be hard for a lot of you people to support this, I would urge you to support this contingency taxation plan.
Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was at an event in the community over the hill this past weekend, and I was approached by several people discussing the education funding situation. They all knew that was the biggest issue we were going to face this session when we came over here to Cheyenne. And they said, well, what solution have you come up with? And when I told them right now, our only solution is just to cut the schools, they said, you're kidding me. We knew you were going to Cheyenne and have to make some tough decisions, but what's your funding plan for funding education? And I had to say, we don't have one right now. It's just cut the school. So I'd be embarrassed if we don't pass this amendment. Thank you.
Speaker Harshman, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just a couple things, and really great debate. And this is a hard bill, you know, and as a person who's worked spending policies and trying to build our permanent funds, I mean, guaranteeing the full 5% is not an easy thing that for me to look at. So all these things are kind of difficult decisions, but how do you close $400 million a year? $400 million a year, 360 growing to $400 million a year. I don't know. You're not going to tax it all. That's like 2.5-3 cent sales tax. You're not going to cut it all, right? We all, I think, can agree on that. So how do you find that? So we tried to say, well, I don't think anybody, I think the appropriators have found, and all of us have, and I think we'll have a lot of second reading budget amendments. It's not easy to cut budgets because budgets are people. And particularly budgets, they go to people who serve people. And so you get this whole kind of rebound through our state. But I think a couple of things. I just want to bring us around full circle. The good representative from the Northwest said, want to see cuts first. You are going to see cuts first. You're going to see cuts first in this plan, if this ever happens. This is an idea. This wasn't even my idea. I thought it was a kind of an elegant idea from a member of leadership to put a trigger on this after we showed the people that we spent. Because I continually hear, how can you cut services or raise taxes when you got $1.5 billion in the bank? Now, $1.5 billion sounds like a lot. We all know it'll go quickly without our careful guidance on the thing. So I think cuts are going to happen first. There was a talk about why not do this in a budget session when there's a high bar, that our founders had a high bar. Well, keep in mind, our founders, we had a 60-day session every other year. Every other year was a general session. There's still a couple of western states that still do that. And it was in 1973 that we changed the Constitution, because our legislators back in 73 thought this would work better if we just had a general session, right, where we come down like we are now and debate all these things that only the House of Representatives, frankly, debates. We bring all the tough stuff and then send it down the hall. And then the amendment said that we'd have a 20-day budget session. And the two-thirds is in there, frankly, to not bring things during a budget session when we're working on the budget. That's what our founders intended. We've always had a two-year budget since the beginning of our state. And now, so that's how that all came into effect. It wasn't because there was a higher standard for anything. It was, frankly, a higher standard to prioritize our work on the budget as the appropriations branch of government. So, again, I just think if this white paper from our JEC and our Appropriations Committee in the House, I think have tried to bring a balanced approach. It's probably nobody likes all five parts of it. It's tough. And so they're tough votes. And so I feel for you guys out there. And you all have your own reasons. You're going to settle in your chair while your name is called. But I'm going to vote for this because I think it's part of a reasonable kind of comprehensive idea to at least say we've tried to solve this. And I think the other part of this bill that brings on, frankly, some recalibration. And we're going to keep looking at this that the good representative from Goshen spoke about. And so we'll have another chance to look at the basket and have input from our citizens. And so I'd urge your aye vote, and let's keep moving this and try to have the House of Representatives come up with a solution that people can look at and say, yeah, I don't like all that, but I think maybe it's the best we could do. And so on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
A first for a second, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anyone represent? Excuse me. Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I was going to just listen, but as we start talking about that rainy day fund, it's called, some of us have been around when we would save some money, and while we were saving it, there were people kicking and screaming, and I'm pretty sure we were hoarding money, and I'm thankful that we have that account. It's kind of a scary idea that we might ever spend it down to a $500,000 from where it's 1.4 now. Anyway, I'm guessing we'll get here before then, but I still think a trigger is not a bad plan. We should be back long. Hopefully, we're working on this long before we get to that level.
Representative Byrd, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I've been here quite a while, and ever since I've been here, the discussions always revolved around us tightening our belt, cutting our budget. I don't think I've been here one session since I got elected where we didn't impose across-the-board cuts or reduce spending in a major portion of the government. So for those of you who are new and think that this is just something that we're tackling now, we have been doing this for at least my entire term, so that's 8 years. We were probably doing it before then. So it's not like we're running into this headstrong. And from that historical experience, what I see is we need to do these cuts, but we also need to put a plan in place to generate revenue. Keeping in mind that we can change this plan if we want down the road. But if we don't have a plan, we have nothing to change and nothing to work with. So on and for.
Chairman Northrup, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to agree with this measure. It's really good business thoughts to be able to say that you're looking out into the future and looking to what you're thinking about future-wise and trying to get your sights on that. It's just like when you go out shooting. You're out shooting, what's the first thing your dad told you? Be careful of what you're shooting at. Make sure of your backstop. That's what we're saying here. Get a backstop on an approval of this amendment.
For your first time, Representative Bayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like the good representative who answers roll call of votes directly after myself, I had a difficult time deciding on this issue. I came here not wanting to raise taxes. However, like her, I didn't sign a no new tax plan pledge. And for those of us who, there seems to be a perception that we're always increasing taxes, we're heavily taxed. I was looking at an analysis recently by the Kiplinger Organization. Wyoming, for individuals and families, is the least taxed state in the nation. We were rated as the number one tax-friendly state. And I don't want to give up that distinction. I think we need to stay there, but I don't think a half a cent sales tax increase will do that. I think we'll still be the least taxed state in the nation. I looked back through the budget book and tried to find the last time there was an increase in taxes on individuals and families in our state. It's been at least 20 years because of our dependence on the mineral industry. The only change in personal and family taxes that have occurred in the last 20 years was the removal of sales tax on food, which is a tax decrease for those of us in lower economic strata. So I reluctantly have decided that I need to vote for this slight tax increase on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? First time? Anyone for your second time? Anyone for your second time before the sponsor? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and against the amendment, you know, I just don't think we need to look at this type of tax at this point. And just playing around with some numbers here, I looked at how many new oil wells do we need in Wyoming to make up this $400 million shortfall right now? And I was surprised. The number was only 140 wells. If we could get 140 new wells drilled right now, over the next year, they'd produce $400 million in severance and ad valorem taxes. I much prefer that way. I don't know about you, but that's the industry we tax. And so let them operate, and let's tax them. We don't hardly tax anyone else. You know, we keep hearing about Wyoming's the lowest tax state in the country. Well, when you ignore the mineral industry, it is. But when you include the mineral industry, it's one of the highest tax states in the country. So, again, this let the industry that we tax pay the bill, and this get these permits issued on this extra 140 wells, and we've taken care of this $400 million deficit.
Anyone else for their second time? Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I have been impressed by the comments of the Speaker and the distinguished Chairman of Revenue in respect of the delay factor that we've permitted into this bill. However, I still think that we need to vote no on this amendment because we're just delaying the fact of an income increase in taxes that's going to be a detriment to the rest of our economy. Our economy is right now in bad trouble. And even speaking about a tax increase now, I think is a negative as far as a recovery. Therefore, I would urge that you vote against this amendment and adopt the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Representative Gray, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. This is the fourth attempt in about a week to add an unnecessary tax on our people. We had the original half-cent increase triggered at $500 million. Then we had the substitute bill that increased it to 2%. Then we had the second reading attempt to trigger a half-cent at $750 million and then a full cent at $500 million, and now we have this fourth attempt on third reading, returning to the first attempt to have a half-cent at $500 million. And looking at this pattern, it kind of made me think about one of the great writers in our language's history, the English bard. His name rhymes with Lakespeare. And one of his great historic plays based on the life of one of the great leaders of that island northeast of the continent to our east. There's a great line there before they're going to go into battle where they're outnumbered 10 to 1 and they're on wave 4 of the attack. And the great leader says, "Once more into the breach, dear friends, once more." And I can't think of a more fitting line here. In my view, the attempts to add efficiencies to the school foundation program account, they've not been adequate. We had really basic amendments to this bill that went nowhere. Really basic things. Basic. This bill, it doesn't even have a provision in it for the super committee to study savings. This proposed tax increase will hurt our people. We hear on spending bill after spending bill about people leaving our state and raising families in other states. But this argument is never heard when you have a tax increase. And I know economics, the beauty of the science is that this often gets lost, but the amazing side effect here is that's what's going to happen here. It's sad. The people are going to leave our state. They're going to raise families in other states. This is going to cost us jobs. One of the things that was said is that the mineral industry is paying too much. They're going to pay a lot of this sales tax. Our people are too. But I think one of the things that lost here is how much they're going to pay, and that's going to lead to lower jobs for our people. The gap unfilled by this sales tax increase, if it fails, and I hope it does, I'm confident that we could get it out of savings of the general fund. I'm also confident with the improvements in our economy and our extraction industries with this new administration we have that it's going to be very helpful. This discussion we heard about people needing to come to the table, the people have come to the table. They work hard day in and day out. And we were flush with money in this state. And I was on the radio every day saying that we were spending too much money. In my view, the rainy day fund should have $3 or $4 billion of it when we started drawing. Now, I understand that there were people who wanted to spend more, but I was on the opposite side of it. It wasn't popular at the time to say that. I wish it had more. A couple of points on the LISRA and the arguments about spending this down. The reason we have this fund, this savings account is to fund structural insolvencies and to phase in changes to fill in the gap on a structural insolvency. It's not to fund a revolving account for loans to private business. It's not to fund entities that do not have insolvencies. What we're talking about here, the insolvencies in the school foundation program account, that's why it's there. The discussion about the two-thirds margin in the budget session and the fact that the margin's going to be higher next year, I think that was very telling, and I appreciate that was talked about. Because there are two-thirds vote for this, and we should be voting for this next year. This should not be done now. And I think that was a very telling argument. When you vote against this, you're representing the 10,000 people back home in your district, and that is who you should be representing. You're representing the taxpayer. This is so unneeded. The trigger isn't even going to be reached for 5 years. We need to work together for efficiencies, which this bill doesn't even contemplate in its current form. And by the way, we did have an unfortunate increase in taxes, very unfortunate, a gas tax increase very recently. I don't think that was needed. Taxes continue to go up on our people. Once more into the breach, dear friends, once more. Don't get worn down here. Vote against this amendment.
Representative Salazar, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I would just like to say that to my friends here that this is probably one of the most important votes we'll take this session. It will be remembered. And when I go to the senior center, I will have a clear conscience. When I go to the VFW and stand before our vets, our retired vets, I will have a clear conscience. And when I stand before that mother with two kids that I met last summer campaigning, and she made it clear to me, don't raise my taxes, I will have a clear conscience. Please vote this down. Thank you.
Representative Edwards, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. You may have remembered yesterday where I were talking about how much the state of Wyoming gave for student, which I
mistakenly said was 1,700. It's 17,000, and our neighboring states were 10,000. There are still opportunities for cuts there. As far as our constitutional, what we said is when we were give our oath to uphold this Constitution, I believe that we are doing that. It doesn't say that education is going to be the only thing left standing, and that's the only thing we can fund. If that would be the case, it would become not a golden goose, it would become a white elephant. There wouldn't be anything left in our state to support it. As we pass all of the augmentations, budget increases that we have through the service industry, I should say state industry, state government, rather, all of those increases are coming on those who have already lost their jobs, all of those who have taken huge pay cuts. They have no way to make up the difference in it. And you're asking them that they should go and spend another half a cent for an increase in sales tax. All of those senior centers, as the previous speaker was talking about, are on a fixed income. All of those that are on fixed incomes, you're not worrying about them. If all of those that are in the mineral industry that haven't lost their jobs yet, if this causes them to lose more jobs, it isn't going to help the school districts, as they have lost several pupils. They will be moving out of state looking for some place to work, and they will lose more students in those schools. I hope that you will take a look at this and all of the taxes that we have put on through our services that we provide as a state agency, and those that have are on the county level that are doing the same thing, and those that are in the city level that are doing also the same thing. And you see the cumulative effect that the taxes that we're asking our citizens to put on. We may be one of the lowest per person on paying taxes, but if you don't have the money to pay it, it's more than you can afford. I hope that you will vote against this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Henderson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I really appreciate the good debate, and I can feel the energy of caring. And that's important, because this does have to do with people. You know, we are where we are because of decisions made before we got here. And there is a rate of spending that it's going at a rate of about $400 million per year faster than it should be. And so you have to ask yourself, when do we right-size the spending? And I know we've done a lot of things to do that just in this session. You know, providing for education is very important. We aren't, I mean, we don't have a money or a spending problem, a providing problem in education. I think we have a spending problem. And in 2014, for example, it was $1.39 billion, billion with a B. 2017, just 36 months later, it's $1.45 billion and growing. I would much rather take $80 million and give it to the districts and raise the teacher's salaries than I would raise the tax on everybody in Wyoming. I think you have to look at the effect of what we're doing here. I have not seen very many five-legged stools. I appreciate the short time frame that the folks who put together the white paper had, and I respect them and applaud them for a really good result. And it's generated a lot of good public discourse, and we should be glad for that. But I don't think we should make a decision today, and oh, by the way, let's not have it take effect until sometime in the future. Are we going to solve the problem, or are we just going to fool around? I think we need to make sure that when we vote today, that we put together a bill that makes sense for our state, our schools, but more importantly, like I said yesterday, for our children. and the people who teach them and the people who take care of them. Revenue source, the largest single revenue source that we have, we control. Our people control. That's managing cost. We've made a lot of decisions already that would more than make up the $80 million that we're talking about for this fifth leg here, this fifth finger of the plan. Cigarette tax. Before lunch, we spent millions of dollars on a substance abuse program that's going to have an annual fee of around $5 or $6, maybe $7 million a year. And it goes on. The fees we've raised, the things we've done, all good things. The will of the body works. I believe in that. If you divide $500 million by $75 million, it comes out to 6.66 years. It's like a pimple on the backside of history. Will it really make a difference? And I say if we're serious about solving the problem, then we should put our heads together with a strong will for the benefit of the people of Wyoming and make doggone sure that we make a decision that makes sense for them and for us. I would like to vote for this. I don't have a problem with the next session. There's enough will and sincerity in the folks that are elected here to do whatever's necessary during a budget session. You look at the history, there's a lot of bills get passed in a budget session that aren't related to the budget. And then by that time, we'll have the benefit of this recalibration thing that's going to go on. And if we need to meet sooner, well, the leadership will come together and they'll let us know. But I asked the question a couple of hours ago during lunch with the person who keeps track of our treasure. And he said somewhere around 18 months. That takes us past the next session. So, folks, I would just say, like I said yesterday, let's let the will of the body work. Vote your conscience. I would like to vote for this bill because I think it's a doggone good bill other than the tax.
Representative Clem, for your first time. I'm sorry, your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I don't think we want to go any longer than what we have to, and I am going to give the body just a few things that have not been spoken before. Don't want to rehash the same old arguments, all right? I do want to thank the sponsor, though, for bringing this this amendment. It sparked some good debate, and I know the sponsor's heart is in this bill as well. I don't think anybody has ill will here. We all want to work toward a solution, and as this good speaker said before, the good ideas are going to bubble to the top. So we debate these issues and let the chips fall where they may. I do want to say that I didn't take the no taxes pledge either. In fact, I'm not afraid to raise taxes. I voted for the tobacco tax. I actually brought three separate taxes. I was a prime sponsor on three separate bills. Two of them had to do with alcohol. One had to do with the wind tax. I'm not afraid to do that. I will say this. We've talked about these five different legs of this education problem. And each of those equates to $80 million. And this bill, without the tax, has four of those, which is $320 million of solutions right there. What we're saying right now is that last leg, that tax increase, is a little bit premature because we're talking about the 2019-2020 session. And that's the next biennium for which we have not yet even budgeted for. I'm not advocating that we spend all of our education or our savings on education either. The fact of the matter is, I think the taxes way is how it's thought out isn't a bad idea. I just think it's premature. I'll say this. You know, are we subjecting, and we've talked about this before in different bills, are we subjecting the 65th legislature to this decision? Shouldn't that be a decision for them? Some of us aren't going to be here. Is this a decision for the 65th legislature? You have to answer that. Are we trying to tie their hands? What if they have better ideas after this super committee meets? It's a good question. What if they have better taxing options? I mean, we're saying that this is the one and only. This is the prime supreme. We better do this one. But what if they have better taxing options? With this tax, will it be more difficult to replace it with a better option for the 65th or even the 66th legislature? Can you see or at least concede to a degree that this is premature. And that is my argument, that it's premature, that we don't have to go there yet. And we've all said, and I think it's common knowledge, that this tax, if it were to go in place, wouldn't even trip into effect until 4 to 5 years down the road. 4 to 5 years down the road, we're going to have the 66th legislature. So why are we making decisions that they are duly elected to make? It's premature. Vote no on this. Vote no. Vote no on the amendment. Vote aye on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Anyone else for their second time? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I think who you are determines what kind of responses you get when you're on the trail. I'm a teacher. I'm known as a teacher. And when I was going down the streets and knocking on the doors, I got a different response than other people's in this body may have received. I think it was almost universal that everybody wants good schools. I heard time and time again from my constituents, whether it was a grandparent, a parent, or even a brother and sister, about what's happening, the good things that is happening in my district school. They told me that they'd be willing to pay for their good system and for it to continue to go forward. The industries in my districts, and I don't think that I'm speaking out of term, need a good education system. They need to attract good workers to the area that they are. And I've talked to industrial leaders in other towns where the system didn't seem to be so good. Our industrial partners were great, are great citizens in our communities. Their donations are significant. And if you go into some of the schools, you see the donations of where, despite the taxes that they're paying, they paid extra because what they wanted to do is they wanted to help the Wyoming education system to produce fantastic graduates. In my day job, I visit 11 different school districts, and I know of a school district that has been hit hard by the recession, depression that's around here. Their assessment was down, so they got hit with that, and that affected their BOCES payments and those kind of things. They had declining enrollment. And with declining enrollment, they received less and less money that was going into funding their education. And finally, their good citizens or industrial partners couldn't pay. And so they were looking at all these things that they had that was gone. Our districts, and this is painfully clear, is one predictability. We've talked about we haven't hit the savings yet, or the cuts, whatever you want to call them. That is what recalibration is about. This bill will force recalibration. I don't want to spend the LISRA down to that point where we even come up with this tax that could be done. We had a former speaker I think was named as Speaker Resting Elk. And he talked about what happened during the last bust in Wyoming's economy. And they were desperate. They were entirely desperate because they didn't know how they were going to pay the bills. They were seriously talking about a state income tax. What this bill does is it removes the same panic what they had back in the 80s when this happened. What this bill does is it starts a tax to where that we have revenue, to where that we can pay the bills. This bill shows the insight of history that we have to have something that will kick in if we ever get to the point where we can't pay the bills. I hope that you support the amendment, and I hope you support the bill.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Greer. I'm sorry, Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Good debate. I was reluctant to bring the bill because I didn't want to hear the debate again, but it was still a good debate nonetheless. And I do appreciate the representative from the land of coal for asking for the eyes and the noes. You know, in 7 years, I've never asked for that, and I actually had had a note that I would, because I think this is a very important issue for us. I don't think it's going to be the most important vote we make, but it is an important issue. And I say that because, and you've heard me say this consistently, come down here to solve this problem and to have the solution. And I, for one, would rather make the hard decision and live with that hard decision rather than wait and waste that off on another legislature. I'm here to make that hard decision. Now, I know 40% of you say no taxes. 40% of you say no cuts. The 20 of us in the middle don't know which way to go. Maybe 10 say all cuts and taxes and no cuts, no taxes. I don't know. You know, and that's fine. That's why we get together and debate these things. And again, I think a good, cordial debate. And I'll just say that again. I am here to make this decision. That's why I brought this amendment. And I'm going to make the decision. It's really not what I want to do, but it's what I'm going to make. And I also, and I do mean this, and the chair of revenue spoke to it, I do have a concern that if we don't make this hard decision, and as we burn through the LISRA, that it will jeopardize some of the other safety nets that we have there. And that, one of those, which is important to my district, is that funding for our local stream. So I think it's a good business decision that we have that plan, that trigger in place. So that was the second reason I brought the bill. With that, great debate. I know we got some more amendments. Got faith in all of us, okay? We're going to get a good bill out of here. And it's all for the kids, right, Mr. Speaker? All for the children. All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, great debate. And this is the heavy lifting we just do such a good job of in this body. So with that, and the ayes and noes having been called for, the chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Biteman.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Bovee.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
No. Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
No.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Grew.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
No. Greer.
Aye.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lone excused. Laux.
No.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Obermuller.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
No.
No. Ponell.
No.
No. Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 34 aye, 25 no, 1 excused.
First reading, second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 236 has been adopted. We're not. Third reading amendment number one to House Bill 236 has been adopted. We are now on amendment number two, third reading, House Bill 236. Speaker Harshman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move third reading amendment number two to House Bill 236 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, I've worked with the sponsor of the who brought this amendment yesterday, and I think the dates just need adjusted. And the way it was adopted yesterday is that special education works on a reimbursement model. And so the end of this coming summer, August 1st, there'll be a reimbursement for the expenses that were incurred this year. And so three-quarters of the year, 75% of the school year is over, and now we're going to talk about changing the reimbursement. And so just simply moved that date out, and so then everybody knows what the rules of the game are. And so, and in fact, there are 80 more special education kids, 80 more IEPs in the state this year than there were a year ago. Now, those 80 certainly aren't distributed equally across the state. You know, we have no idea. And so I think it's important that we don't go three-quarters of the way through a year. I just think it's not I think we can do a better job helping our local school boards manage this cost. So I'd stand for any questions.
Chairman Madden, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on the logistics of this thing. Let's suppose that I've got a school district that's really small, and in 2016, 2017, they've got only three students that wherein the special education applies. In other words, three people that are being educated using special education. But when it gets to 2018 and 19, all three of those students have moved away into a different town in a different school district. The way I read this, that means that that school district now with no students with special education needs will have the same amount of money to spend on what in 2018 and 2019.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would just like to again acknowledge the fact that the good speaker and I have visited over that. The intent was never to include this year, but I just can't count very good, and so he is able to correct that and appreciate him getting that done.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Second time prior to the sponsor. Speaker Harshman, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. To answer the good chairman of revenue's question, special education is done on a reimbursement, and so if those three moved away, there will be no reimbursement for no services. But at the same time, if three more moved in and you had six, it will not exceed the expenses for three.
We are voting on third reading amendment number two to House Bill 236. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Third reading amendment number two to House Bill 236 has been adopted. We are now on third reading amendment number three. Representative Ayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number three to the substitute HB 263 and would like to urge you vote for this amendment. I think what I'm doing with this amendment is just trying to correct some unintended consequences. And it deals with the fractional AMD definition that was added to the bill on page 6. There are many districts around the state that have incorporated some very good programs where they allow students to participate for one period a day in work release, apprenticeships, open periods, or religious studies. My understanding from the good chairman of the education, that the intent of this addition to the ADM definition was reduce ADM and the funding for ADMs in those cases where a student was absent from school for several hours for half a day, not for just one period, for the purposes that I mentioned above. This is a simple amendment, and it inserts at the end of the sentence on line 13, pupils who attend at least 80% of a full-time equivalency basis shall be considered full-time. And then on line 14, after than, insert 80% of. So I didn't bring my bill up. I think without this amendment, some schools will be so impacted by this fractional ADM calculation that they will eliminate their release time program in order to count the affected student as a full ADM. When that happens, the anticipated savings to the school foundation program will never be realized. And in the process, we will have destroyed some very good programs. I urge your support for this amendment, and would ask for further comments or questions.
Chairman Northrup, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was not the intent of the Education Committee to inflict their will upon any group of people, and so we consider this a friendly amendment and would ask you to support it. Vote your conscience. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Okay. Question having been called, we are voting on third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 236. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 3 has been adopted. We are now on third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 236. Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I'd like to withdraw third reading amendment number 4 from House Bill 236.
Thank you, Representative. We are now on third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 236. Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 236 and ask for your favorable consideration. And in your box, you should have a handout which has my initials in House District 5. And it is going to show you the funds that we're dealing with. If you can find it, it has some lines like this. All right. And so what this semi-short amendment does is on page 11 after line 21, we deal with Title 21-13-3-13, and we're affecting the distribution of funds from the foundation account. And basically this is the school district's savings account or their reserve funds. And the thinking behind this is if we're going to be drawing down on our reserves, then maybe the school district should have a little skin in the game and draw down on their reserves. So currently the amount that they have is over 15%. So this would just take over 7% that would count as local revenue and reduce their payments from the permanent account or increase their recapture payments on the 7% rather than the 15%. And it also no longer excludes the pre-97 or pre-Campbell funds from being affected. And so this is just a policy decision for the body. I don't want to draw out debate a lot longer, but surely the good chairman has some thoughts on that. And so just a policy decision for the body.
Chairman Northrup, for your first time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chairman. So what do districts use their reserves for? They use their reserves for a lot of things, including floating from one paycheck to another paycheck that they get from the state. But another thing that they use them for is perhaps they have an enhancement in mind on a building or something that's going on. And so then they use that money for that enhancement. You could also use it to save up a little bit of money to put a roof on an enhancement, for example. So there's lots of other places that enhancements are used besides just as money sitting around in an account on and against.
Majority Whip Summers, for your first time.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, thank you. On and against the amendment. You can look on the list. My districts have savings accounts. At least one of them has a pre-97 savings account. So let's talk to that piece first. So that was money set aside before the state changed kind of the equity and funding in education. So those are dollars that those districts, that came from district revenues in their own districts at that time, and that is not state dollars, in my opinion. That is pre-97 dollars that I don't know that we can touch with this. So that's one question I would have. Then the other question, one reason you look in these mineral districts, and one reason they do have large coffee cans to hold money, these large reserves, is we also suffer from what's called NOVCs, notice of valuation change. And so what an NOVC is the mineral company comes in and they say, we expect we're going to pay this amount of money. You know, we have this amount of taxes due, so we are going to pay this amount of money. And then what happens as they actually pump that out and they sell that and they get the actual amount that they owe in taxes, sometimes they don't owe that much. And so they may come in and the taxes may shift back. And we had one in our county in the last few years that was a $10 million shift in taxes and notice of valuation change. And and that is paid back. So the state will pay that back to the districts, but it's over a course of time. And really one of the big reasons these reserves were put in there is so that if you had one of these NOVCs, that you could pay that bill and then get reimbursed. And it's really about cash flow of districts and how you cash flow that. And particularly in these mineral districts where we have these huge swings in NOVCs at times. So I think it's problematic, particularly at setting it at 7%. You know, 7% seems to be a really restricted reserve account. And so, one, I'm concerned about rolling in pre-97 dollars that were taxes from local districts before we had equalization and whether that's constitutional. And then the second question I have is how are we going to handle these NOVCs on and against the amendment for the bill?
Representative Clem, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, on and for the amendment. And I do appreciate the little white paper on there. And I'm proud to have my name on this amendment, along with two others of this body. You know, we passed a bill early in the session that got rid of any kind of interest payment that the schools would have to pay back for borrowing from the foundation funds. You recall that? And the purpose was, well, I don't know what the purpose was behind that. It was something I was opposed to. But as it is now, they have all these reserves on hand. And we're told it's for cash flow and things like that. But I just want to assure this body that even if these reserves, and what we would effectively do is we're saying, you need to spend down your reserves. You need to be part of the solution. Because up until now, we haven't had much help from these districts. They've been saying, hey, let's hold the status quo. We want increases. We don't want any kind of cuts. So this is a measure to say, you know what, you need to have some skin in the game. And as skin in the game, you need to spend down some of your reserves and be a part of the solution and not just be just object to everything that we try to do as a legislature. So that's what this bill is all about, or this amendment is all about. And so really what it effectively do is it cut their reserve amounts about in half. Now, if you're wondering or worried about that cash flow and things that was just mentioned by the last speaker, recall that we passed a bill that got rid of any of those interest fees. So they're not paying a penalty if they go and borrow from the state if they're short on cash. And yet if you look at some of these numbers, good golly. And here they are complaining about cuts, and yet they have a lot of money in the bank. So on and for this amendment.
Representative Kinner, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Certainly appreciate the good bringer of the amendment's thoughts and interest in helping out. But ladies and gentlemen, I would like to suggest that
that as we are presenting these districts with cuts, shouldn't they have the ability to soften the blow in some areas? And I would suggest that this is their way to do that, that they can use these funds, and I'm happy that they have them, quite honestly, because as we do present them with these cuts, I think this is a way they can soften the blow, soften the landing, so to speak, and give them time to make their necessary cuts and transition. So on and against the amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Speaker Harshman, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem members, I appreciate the good bringer of the amendment from Goshen. And so she had passed out a handout, and then I also passed out a kind of a summary, a kind of different look at that as well. It takes a couple of her columns and combines them. So if you get out that handout that I just hit your tray, and I circled up above A, B, C, and CB, the columns. And so when we can talk about this, but if you go to the bottom of column C, that's the total reserves in the district. And then if you look at the bringer of the amendments, you can see that nearly $47 million of that, $46,999,000, is pre-97. I think the majority whip talked about pre-97, those could be, well, we know they're at least 20 years old. They could be 30, 40, 50-year-old reserves. Right back when our founders of these school districts or the people in our school districts levied a tax on themselves. That's where that's come from. That's why in all the settlements, that's been the demarcation line. And now this amendment on line 31 pulls all those in, line 31 and 32 on the first page. So I think that's the first problem. But then if you take and you go back to the first handout, so the number is $161 million in reserves. And so if you look at the handout I just gave you then, you can see the foundation guarantee, $1,441 million. And you can see your districts, how much money they get each year. Okay, you can see that. And then you can see this proposed amendment in column B. That's the 7%. So that's the amount of reserves that they would be allowed to have under this amendment. And then you go to column C, which is their current reserves, which includes the 15% that we've encouraged in law, as well as the pre-97 money. So you can see the amount of the reserves. And then the effect of this amendment then is on column CB, C minus B, the last column. That's the money that will have to be spent in the next 16 months from your school district. Now, it was one of the bringers and sponsors of this amendment said, we got to get skin in the game because all we hear from school districts is, give me more money, don't cut me. That's not what I hear from everybody out there. And I'll just gently push back on that. And if you read the 1,000 comments literally on the white paper in House Bill 236, every one of them, nearly every one of those 1,000 comments began, first of all, thank you for dealing with this. This is a tough issue. We realize the state is in tough financial times. And then they'll go on and state their position. But I don't think anybody's ever said, I mean, I haven't read one of those comments that said, this is off the table or that's off the table. So I think this is a good discussion to have about reserves, but what's the right amount? Are we going to... That'd be like us saying, hey, we're going to spend half our LSRA in 1 year, and whether you need to or not. I think of our university and our community colleges who have small little reserves they put up with the excellence in higher ed chairs. They're using that to soften the landing on this, on the lower investment income. And, the superintendents and the school boards, the locally elected school boards that I'd remind you that run in bigger elections than any of us, they manage these districts. That's what they're elected to do, and they know this is coming, and they're preparing to kind of soften the landing. The other thing I would point out, which these are used for, these reserves, is when you open a new school. See, everything in the model is a reimbursement. You don't get pre-funded. It's a reimbursement on the previous year. So if you're in a community that just opened a new school, that somehow has got to come out of your reserves. Somehow you got to put up that money up front. And so there's a lot of reasons that we don't really even know about. And so we've avoided, being the school board of the state. And so I would encourage us to let our local school boards who have carefully built these reserves over the years, manage this downturn. They're going to use their reserves. They're going to have to. And they want the same thing we all want. And so I'd encourage us to let them do it, not force them to spend $108 million in the next 16 months. And that $108 million will go up. And you see my little arrow at the bottom. This goes up as column A goes down. So as we make cuts to the block grant, then the 7% gets smaller. And then this difference, this 108, will only grow. And so I don't think that's our intention, to force people to spend a bunch of money in the next 16 months. So the idea is to hang on to it, slowly burn it, soften the landing, have the fewest, you know, detrimental impacts that we can have. So
time.
Thank you.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, pro tem. I'm against, on and against the amendment. Luckily, our good superintendent, we only have one school district, very large school district, but luckily he's here, and I could ask him a couple of quick thoughts. Speaker Harshman already brought up a number of them, but the one point that's already been made is cash flow reasons why this is a bad idea. Cuts coming, they realize that there are cuts coming, and this, the reserves allow them to stair step, and as the speaker mentioned, the cushion effect. What kind of good governance are we expecting out of the districts that we've entrusted with all of this money to spend down $108 million across the board in 48 districts in 16 months to force that issue on them when we've entrusted them with that money? I think that's another bad move. Recalibration is coming. Can't that be part of the look at recalibration, is what the reserve policies might be? And then lastly, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I would mention unforeseen events within the districts. And I don't know what those are. That's why they're unforeseen. But that's what those reserve accounts are. They're not just a slush fund. And I think there's a lot of unintended consequences with this amendment, and I would urge the body to reject it.
Representative Flitner, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and appreciate the bringer of this amendment. And I will just give you a little different perspective, having just been served the past 6 years, 6 years as a trustee. We have the most beautiful new middle school in the community where I served as a trustee, thanks to this legislative body, the state of Wyoming, and also to our cash reserves. Because we did a lot of haggling. We have a tremendous superintendent. He did a lot of haggling between this legislative body and ourselves. And in order for us to get that school built, we had to bring some money of our own to the table. And in my 6 years as a trustee, we managed to build up that reserve from about $700,000 to just over $1 million. And that's not easy to do when you live in a relatively poor county. At any rate, just so you know, that's where some of those dollars went. And you should feel good about the fact that you've built a really nice new middle school in the community that I represented. And anyway, just a different perspective on those monies and where they go locally. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Pinal.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I'm against the amendment for the bill, but I think, you know, I think this is not the time to punish each of these school districts throughout the state, because I think it would be more of a detriment to the smaller districts that would have a tough time if there was a major incident that took place that they had to deal with. So I would, again, I'd hate to force them to try to spend this money before the deadline. And here again, I think that we should applaud them for having savings. It didn't happen overnight. It took time to build up to this. So I urge you to vote no on the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Crank.
Thank you, Speaker. The problem I have with the amendment is that it seems we have a process in place that is equitable to fund every school district by the same method. When we take in and then at the end of that decide that we're going to jump in and regardless of what savings you have, we're going to dump you all down to the same percentage, that won't be equitable to them. It'll be a different amount for each district, and it won't be balanced by any way. So on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Oh, Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would agree with the last two speakers. And then I would also voice a personal concern about the pie tax that will be imposed as soon as these funds are drawn down, because as they've used some of these funds saved up over the years to pay for things around the schools and stuff they needed, these disappear. I can only imagine the increase in number of pies Lloyd has to buy. All these little kids come around the house because they've got to have a new this or new that at the school, and they don't have any funds left or to do it, and so it's left back to the community to raise it by selling those nasty dang pies that we have a 5-year supply of. And so I'm against this kind of taxes, so I would encourage you to be careful when you think about this amendment.
Representative Freeman, for your first time.
First for a second.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Anyone for their second time? Representative McKim, is this your first time?
First time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman, just remind you that when we first started on this, spending 18 years on the school board, the idea was to make sure that these districts were financially responsible. And they looked at this as a opportunity to build up the reserves to take care of their districts in case something happened. And as they looked at it, the 15% that they were allowed to keep, they were thinking, all right, so how long could our district survive if funds were cut off? And as they built up the reserves, they were more confident in what they could save and how they could operate their districts. And so as they went through this, the more reserve they had, the better they felt about being able to continue their districts. And I don't think we should punish them for thinking ahead much in the same manner we are looking at. We're looking at keeping them afloat, and they were looking at keeping themselves afloat. So against this amendment, just remember, these districts are looking ahead for their future also.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I know how this vote might go since almost everybody has spoken on this amendment. But just to recap, so we do, some of these districts have 20-year-old taxes that they've collected from people that they're holding. They can borrow from the state interest-free, and there are several large coffee cans that are sitting around. Also, 7% would remain, so we wouldn't be touching that. And currently, we've already set this policy at 15%, so that is clearly within the purview of the legislature to do. We're not micromanaging. So with that, I would appreciate your favorable consideration. Thank you.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 236. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 236 has failed. We are now on Third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 236. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I bring to you third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 236 and ask for your favorable consideration. This bill, all it does is adds in on line 5, it moves, before it moves down the amendment we did on the Gray Amendment yesterday, to a 4, and if you look on your sheet on page 35 in your bill, in line 14 where it'll have a line 5 or a 5, and it says options for budget and expenditures reductions. What I'm looking for there is the opportunity that it's not in lacking for the committee that's going to overlook all of these legs to make sure they have them all to where they can use them all and not eliminate budget and expenditure reductions. I think that these are also ones that we need to look at, not just as it has on line 7, where options for use of existing and unencumbered and unobligated revenues. 2, consideration for use of diversions for existing revenue streams and investments. And number 3, options to increase revenues. I think there still needs to be one in there, options for budget and expenditure reductions. I hope that you will support this amendment.
Anyone for their first time? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Temp. Speaking in support of the amendment, one of the things that is troubling about this bill, one of the many things, is that as opposed to the other supercommittee bill, which had its own issues, this one had nothing in the area where it says what it's going to study on budget efficiencies. And my constituents really do believe that there's a lot of room for budget efficiencies. I think that's something that 95% and above of Wyoming, of our fellow citizens here, believe. And for us not to have that in there, we added ESAs yesterday, but for us to have nothing about budget efficiencies is really, really problematic. So please support this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I thought that that was what the whole recalibration process was going to do, was give us a budget, a new budget, and more expenditure options and reductions. So vote your conscience on this. It's kind of redundant.
Anyone else for your first time? First time? Second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Edwards?
You might think it's kind of redundant, but I want it in there so that it is not overlooked and it is done. I think that also that maybe this committee might ought to look a lot back at where we came from, how we got here, so that maybe our districts are once again doing their own budgets with their own money and not looking to the state to do this. And I believe that there is an opportunity for the state to do a slip board. And it has nothing at all to do with my amendment, but I thought I would throw that in there for you. Vote on and for amendment number 6. Thank you.
Okay. We are on amendment number. We are on third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 236. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 236 has been adopted. Okay. House Bill 236 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk shall call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Biteman. No. Blackburn.
Nope.
No. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Bovee.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
Aye.
Aye. Burkhart.
Aye.
Aye. Bird.
Aye.
Aye. Clausen.
Aye.
Aye. Clem.
Aye.
Aye. Connolly.
Aye.
Aye. Court.
Aye.
Aye. Crank.
Aye.
Aye. Dayton.
Aye.
Aye. Edwards.
Aye.
Aye. Eklund.
Aye.
Aye. Ayer.
Aye.
Aye. Flettner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Aye. Garou.
Aye.
Aye. Gray.
No.
No. Greer.
Aye.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Aye. Lone. Excused. Laux.
No.
No. McGuire.
Aye.
Aye. Madden.
Aye.
Aye. McKim. No. Miller. No. Nicholas.
Aye.
Aye. Northrup.
Aye.
Aye. Obermuller.
Aye.
Aye. Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Aye. Pelkey.
Aye.
Aye. Pieperinen.
No.
No. Pannell.
Aye.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zawanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Clem. Aye. To no. Edwards. Aye. To no. Further changes? Closing vote. Vote is closed. 43 aye, 16 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 236, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 236 has passed the House.
I know I hit her. I was trying to knock her down.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 252.
Go ahead, Reading Clerk.
House Bill 252, introduced by Representative Larson. Management Council Membership, an act relating to Management Council Membership. Be it enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Representative Blake.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 252 and we'll withdraw it at the appropriate time. Mr. Speaker, I came here in 2007, that picture right out there. I actually had hair, and it was brown. I know I don't have much hair left because I cut it that way, but it's definitely not brown anymore. The minority party had 18 members that year, and we had some great legislation that year because we had a differing viewpoint from all different walks of life. And this bill here is an old friend. We've had this bill before. In 2011, we had a similar bill. I'll probably talk about that a little later. But I think the thing that that bill we had in 2011, it changed the makeup of all the committees, the select committees. And I was a no vote on that bill then. But, you know, we lived through it. In 2011, the minority party had 8 members. We have 9 members this go around. So it's kind of like, I can't put my finger on it if we don't want differing viewpoints. Because I think differing viewpoints is what makes good legislation. If everything gets rubber stamped by one faction, I don't think that's really great legislation. I'm not saying it's horrible. I'm not saying it's bad or anything like that. But a differing viewpoint is always in demand, I think. I work for a railroad company, works on the southern part of the state. I train new hires all the time. And I guess it's maybe because I've been there for quite a while, 26 years. But when I train a new person, I don't say, this is how we're going to do it. I'm in control.
I want to listen to what he has to say, because he might have a better idea than I have. Even though I've been doing it for 26 years, he's been on the job for 3 months. I want to hear his point of view. And sometimes I go, that's a dang good idea. Let's try that. I know a lot of old head conductors. When I hired out, you told an old head conductor, hey, let's try this way. He's like, it's the way we've done it. I'm not going to change. This is how we're going to do it. It's kind of like you get a supermajority. It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't really a supermajority. But now it is a supermajority. We're going to change the rules. It's working on management council. I don't know of any great disagreements on management council. I haven't heard of any in 11 years. I've known some of you for going on 11 years, some of you 9, some of you 7, some of you 5, some of you 3, some of you are just starting to get to know you. I want to know about your families. I want to know everything about you. Every time a speaker, every time we come, new session, speaker gets up, majority floor leader, we're all in this together. I heard a chairman the other night tell me, I don't look at what's behind the name. I want to know good ideas. I don't know if that person's willing to work hard. I'm against this bill, and I got a little bit more to say later on, but take any questions or more comments. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Grew.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, rise against Bill 252. When I started here 21 days ago, or 23, I sat with a lot of you as new members. We heard a lot of inspirational talk. Trust the institution. Respect the process. And that we're all, as the last speaker said, that we're all in this together. As each day has gone by, I've listened and listened to people who I frankly don't agree with at all, but learn from what they've said. And learn maybe to look at things in a different way. And the other night, when we were staying late, and I'm told that we had to stay late to do the people's business, working late, all eating pizza, all of a sudden 252 hits the floor. And I read it, and for the first time in these 21 days, I frankly felt like my time was being wasted. I didn't understand. To be perfectly honest with you, I got a little bit mad. And frankly, one thing that I don't like is to have my time wasted. I will fight to listen to people, whether I agree with them or not. I will defend their right to the death to say it, but I don't like my time to be wasted. I thought this body's working pretty well. Today, I think I've watched it work very well, Mr. Speaker. I think it's worked at its best. I'm against this bill, and I urge your no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Any members for your first time? Any members first time, second time before the sponsor? Is there a first time? Second time. Okay, Representative Blake for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to talk about in 2011, we had this really similar bill. It was Senate File 95. And what happened on that bill, it had the select committees, like I said before, but it had management council. But it was pulled. I looked at the, excuse me. The amendment that came, that pulled management council out of that bill, was brought by the speaker. Senate File 95 was assigned to the Rules Committee. It was assigned the chairman, who is also the speaker, pulled the management council part out of that bill. And I'm going to withdraw this amendment. I urge you to vote no on this. We're all in this together. I consider you some of my best friends anywhere. So we're here to be part of the solution. We are not, the minority party is not part of the problem.
we're part of the solution, and we will be the solution with the majority party as well. Mr. Speaker, I withdraw third reading amendment number one to House Bill 252 and call for the question.
Thank you, Representative Blake. Third reading amendment number one to House Bill 252 has been withdrawn. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
No. Baker.
Aye.
Aye. Barlow.
No.
No. Bightman. Aye. Blackburn. Blackburn. Aye. Blake.
No.
No. Bovee. No. Brown.
No.
No. Burkhart. Aye. Bird.
No.
No. Clausen.
Aye.
Aye. Clem.
Aye.
Aye. Connolly.
No.
No. Court.
No.
No. Crank.
No.
No. Dayton. No. Edwards.
Aye.
Aye. Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
No.
No. Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
No.
No. Furphy.
No.
No. Giroux.
No.
No. Gray.
Aye.
Aye. Greer.
Aye.
Aye. Haley. Haley.
No.
No. Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Aye. Henderson.
Aye.
Aye. Hunt.
Aye.
Aye. Jennings.
Aye.
Aye. Kinner.
No.
No. Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Aye. Lindholm.
Aye.
Aye. Lone excused. Laux.
Aye.
Aye. McGuire.
Aye.
Aye. Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
No. Miller.
Aye.
Aye. Nicholas.
No.
No. Northrup.
No.
No. Obermueller. Olson. Aye. Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
No. Pipirinen.
No.
No. Ponell.
Aye.
Aye. Salazar.
Aye.
Aye. Schwartz.
No.
No. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
Aye.
Aye. Sweeney.
No.
Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
No.
No. Winters.
Aye.
Aye. Zawanitzer.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Speaker.
No.
No. Obermueller. Excused. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Olson. Aye to no. Hunt. Aye to no. Henderson. Aye to no. Burkhart. Aye to no. Further changes. Winters. Aye to no. Further changes. Hallinan, aye to no. Closing vote. The vote is closed. 20 aye, 38 no, 2 excused.
House Bill 252 having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House. House Bill 252 has failed to pass the House. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 266.
House Bill 266, introduced by Representative Laux. Study on evaluation requirements for small cities and towns, an act relating to the Department of Audit. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 266, and I'll withdraw at the appropriate time. First and foremost, I just want to let the body know that this is actually a really good bill. I just wanted to bring something to the attention of the body on this, and we've heard this a few times this session already in the past 20 days. There was something said during general file on this, and if you don't remember, this was the one of the bills that was ran through on the very last night that we had to get bills through on general file. It was ran through very quickly, and there was a lot of discussion happening. There was a lot of talk in the back of this area here, and there was something that was set up at the mic, and it was kind of disturbing to me, and I've heard it five or six times now, and that was, you know, some of these agencies are starting to say we'll absorb the costs of running some of these issues, and we're okay with running these and absorbing these costs. I just want to offer a little bit of advice here, or maybe just some caution, that we're asking a lot of state agencies to absorb a lot of costs and coming into doing a lot of these things now. But then we're also talking about cutting government. So it's just one of those things that I've started looking at, that
we've continuously asked state government to do more with less, and we're now passing more bills to do more with less. And I just want to be cautious that we understand that we're starting to set a precedent here with this, and that we need to be careful what we're asking for, because when you put something into statute and you say that thou shalt do this, they have to do this. We can't cut that until we cut this portion out. So that's my cautionary note, and I'll stand for anybody else. And like I said, I'll withdraw this at the appropriate time.
Any other discussion? No discussion. Back to the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I am in favor of this bill. This was not an amendment to kill this particular bill whatsoever. So on and for this bill, and I withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Third reading, amendment number one to House Bill 266 has been withdrawn. The Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Aye. Baker.
Aye.
Aye. Barlow.
Aye.
Aye. Biteman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Bovee.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Clausen.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Court.
Aye.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Garou.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone excused. Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller. Aye. Miller. Aye. Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Obermuller.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
No.
Pawnell.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Aye. Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Aye. Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 50 aye, 9 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 266, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elect to the House, House Bill 266 has passed the House. We're on that order of business. On action on Committee of the Whole on House Bill 1, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole for consideration of House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations, and, if we're lucky, maybe even a few Senate files on your yellow sheet, in that order.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Chairman Zwanitzer.
We could sing Cowboy Joe right now, actually. Committee of the Whole, come to order. We'll wait just a second to have appropriations take their places.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Just a reminder for the body that any second reading amendments need to be in 55 minutes.
All right. With that, we are at Section 57, Community College Commission. Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 057, Community College Commission, page 15 on your summary sheet and page 54 of your bill. Mr. Chairman, the governor's recommendation for the supplemental budget reduced Agency 057 by $21,256,011 in general fund dollars from the 2017-18 budget bill, which represents an 8.1% reduction from the general fund 2017-18 budget bill. JAC adopted the governor's recs for Agency 057 with amendments. JAC adopted the Gov's enterprise reduction of $1,537,467 general fund. JAC adopted the governor's reduction of $11,783,315 general fund in the 600 series, which the commission estimates will result in a reduction of 194 positions, of which 130 are classified as part-time positions. JAC adopted the governor's recommendation of $5,816,693 general fund in the 600 series for the health insurance supporting the 194 reduced positions. JAC adopted the governor's recommendation of reduction, $461,772 general fund in the 600-900 series for the WIN loan and grant program. JAC adopted the governor's reduction of $685,594 general fund in the 600 series for Wyoming Public TV. This includes $390,000 in over-appropriated funds. And, Mr. Chairman, your JAC did not adopt the governor's recommendation of $631,250 general fund for the 50% cut to the Veterans Tuition Waiver Program. Your JAC retained the money for that program. And finally, Mr. Chairman, your JAC reduced $590,902 in state aid for the community college and portion of Section 320 in your budget bill, position freeze and statewide budget reduction. So I want to visit with you about that for just a second. So, Mr. Chairman, remember that we had a freeze on positions in the general fund of agencies. So we don't freeze positions in community colleges or UW. So what we did was we took a like amount of money that would have represented that freeze, and that's where this cut comes from. So it's kind of their portion of that cut, only we don't really mess with positions that's within their block grants. So with Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Vice Chairman Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to make sure I understand that last, section 320. So that, as I understand it, that was an across the board to all the agencies and then carried over into these others. If you could clarify that for me, please.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, correct. So what you would see in 320 is the act in that footnote or that section 320 is really what we do with the other agencies of state government. We have this freeze in place. We can do that, but we cannot freeze community college. What we do is a like amount. Their share of that cut will come out of their block grant, and that's the same thing we're going to do in the UW as well. It's their share of that cut if we were to represent that cut in a dollar figure, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So community colleges have cut 98 positions and not filled 45. And they've also suffered from a decrease of assessed valuation with a $4.8 million reduction in revenue. So I'm asking, is there an $11.5 million really cut to the community colleges?
Mr. Majority Whip.
I'm not sure I understood that, but yes. What I have in my notes, and I could be wrong, is I have the JAC adopted the governor's reduction of $11,783,315 general fund in the 600 series, which the commission estimates will result in a reduction of 194 positions, of which 135 are classified as part-time. So that 90-some figure is FTEs. And so when you figure in the part-time with all of that, you get to the FTE number that was represented by the good chair of education.
Further discussion on Section 57. Seeing none. And question being called. Thank you. All those in favor of Section 57 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 57 is passed, committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 60, State Lands and Investments. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 060, Office of State Lands and Investments, which is page 16 on your summary sheet and page 56 in your bill. Mr. Chairman, this agency manages all the state lands and forests, as well as managing the royalty payments and leases. The governor's recommendations included his enterprise reductions of about $330,000, a reduction of $1,070,805 in the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund program. And let me just pause to explain that. Most of that program comes from federal funds, with about 20% from state dollars. And the reason that he cut here, there wasn't a JAC cut, but the federal program has a lot of strings attached to it, so they're actually having trouble getting localities to apply for the program. And so the feds complained that we weren't using enough federal money. So this actually cuts state dollars, gets the feds out of our hair, but we had to leave some because the first year has already been committed. The governor also reduced the size of the fund for fire payments and eliminates fire fund grants to counties for county fire departments. So if there is a bad fire season, fire payments related to state lands will be paid out of the emergency fire suppression account, which has a $12 million balance presently. So JAC accepted the governor's recs, but denied the governor's letter requesting $5 million for emergency grants to local governments. The local governments can still apply for projects under the SLIB. So total reduction in general funds to this agency is $2,446,206, or just under 10%. And, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions, I would move to close the Office of State Lands.
Question being called and no further discussion. All those in favor of Section 60, State Lands and Investments, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 60 is passed, committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 63, Governor's Residence. Chairman Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we open Section 63 and move for your favorable consideration. And this is a tough one for me. We're just following the Gov's recs. We're not doing anything other than that, and I would move to close.
Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of Section 63, Governor's Residence, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 63 is passed, committee of the whole. We're now back on Section 67, the University of Wyoming.
66.
Hey, Section 66, Wyoming Tourism Board, at the bottom of the page. Chairman Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And folks, we're on now page 58 of your bill, page 17 of the summary sheet. And I would move to open Section 66 and ask for your favorable consideration, and I'll provide the explanation. Ladies and gentlemen, if you look to the summary sheet, that's the easiest way to understand this. The only additional cuts that JAC did, in addition to the governor's recs, is the elimination of two vacant AWEC positions for a total of $215,000 of general fund dollars. And if there are any questions, I would move to close.
Question being called on Section 66, Wyoming Tourism Board. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 66 has passed, committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 67, the University of Wyoming. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to open Section 67, University of Wyoming. That's page 15 on your summary sheet and page 60 through 66 on the budget bill. Mr. Chairman, with the chief executive's reductions, the agency cut $42,674,792, which represents about a 9.7% reduction. Put differently, the budget reductions to UW account for approximately 17% of all the budget reductions of the executive branch. According to the university, these reductions and the prior legislative cuts from the Penny Plan have resulted in a reduction of 202 positions through vacancies, attrition, and early retirement. Additionally, JAC denied the governor's letter number one, requesting $500,000 in general funds for the UW Science Initiative, as seen in summary sheet note number one. JAC also denied the governor's letter number one requesting $475,000 in general fund for a strategic enrollment management program and added footnote number 10 to allow the university to pursue the development of a system using internal resources as seen in summary sheet note number 2. JAC reduced $1,043,771 in general funds to reflect the position and or program reductions as provided in section 320, known as the position freeze and statewide budget reduction, which would be seen for all other agencies. That budget reduction is seen on page 107 through 109 of the budget bill, but it is summary sheet note number 3 in this agency. JAC further modified footnote number 7 to allow the university to expend $5 million general fund upon match for purpose of research on unconventional oil and gas reservoirs. That is seen in summary note number 4. Please note this is a language change only and not a new appropriation. This is amending the 2016 footnote number 7 by reducing the total appropriation for the endowment-related matching funds by $5 million, and allowing this same $5 million to be used to match private funds for research in unconventional oil and gas reservoirs. And the private match is in place and available at the university. JAC added footnote number 10, allowing the university to pursue the development of a strategic enrollment system, as we discussed earlier. JAC added footnote number 11 to direct the university to work with the community colleges on developing a statewide approach to enrollment, incentives, and recruiting, and required a report for the 2019-2020 budget. And finally, JAC added footnote number 12 to direct the university to work with the city of Laramie to consider the closure of 15th Street between Ivinson and Willett. This is an action similar to the direction the legislature has provided regarding the Lewis Street and the expansion of the new College of Engineering and STEM Lab, so this is not an unprecedented move. And with that, I would take some questions.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question here on that last note, which is footnote number 5 on the summary sheet, directing the university to work with the city of Laramie. And here it says to pursue the closure of 15th Street. The last speaker just mentioned that it was going to be the consideration of the closure of 15th Street. So I guess I'm just kind of curious, number one, why we're looking at closing that down, and if that's really, I guess I'm trying to understand as a freshman here, the purview of the legislature to ask the university as well as a town to close down a street, but number two, what the purpose of this is.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the real purpose is to try and unify the entire campus. We have the residence halls on one side of the street and a good portion of the campus starting right on the other side of that street. And just to unify that campus, create more of a pedestrian mall through there might be a possibility, might not. But without the encouragement from this body, the city over there has had struggles with wanting to work with the university on occasion. And so we're trying to get the city to come to the table, have a discussion with the university, and maybe they'll even come up with a better plan than vacating it as it's stated in the footnote itself. But the bottom line is we'd like to see the campus unified a little bit better, and currently that 15th Street really divides the campus right in half from a pedestrian perspective.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. I'm curious about some of the what I would call kind of permissive footnotes that are on the cheat sheet. They somewhat appear to me to be kind of policy making, but one of them in particular allows UW to expend funds from any available source for a strategic enrollment plan. And I'm curious if that means from capital construction, if that means from WAMI, if that means from the NCAR MOU. My guess is no, but I'm curious about that. But the biggest one that I'm curious about is the $1 million that is associated with Section 320. And I'd like a lot more information about the discussion that happened in JAC regarding that, because certainly when I was there, in December, we received a really, really detailed outline of how UW was meeting the mandatory cuts and the enormous number of positions that were already eliminated. So more about the very specific discussion that led to that additional $1 million cut.
Representative Walters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll answer that first one first. That strategic enrollment came from a governor's letter in which we denied the funding, but we wanted to give the university the ability to work on enrollment and retention. And we felt that if we didn't put that in it as a footnote and they went ahead and pursued the ideas of recruitment and retention, it might look as though as they were going against the will of this body. And it was not the will of the committee to not allow them to work on that project. We just didn't want to give them the money to work on that project. And so that was the reason. I think the university is really on board and likes our approach. They would have liked to have the money, obviously, but they still like the approach of being told that we're okay with them pursuing that idea and that endeavor of recruitment and retention. As to the Section 320 position freeze and the additional $1 million, that was the same thing we have done to the community colleges, and every agency is taking this position cut. And because the money that goes out to the community colleges and the university goes out in a block grant form, we couldn't effectuate that same cut on those two. But we came up with a way of creating it through a dollar value computation, and so that's where we came up with that $1 million. We were very cognizant of the fact that they've, as I described earlier, they've taken almost a little over a $42 million cut. They've cut 202 positions in the last year. We're very cognizant of that, but all of these other agencies within the state have also made significant cuts to their budget, to their personnel, and we just felt it was necessary to make sure that everybody was on board as much as we may or may not have liked that.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, two different things. On whether or not a footnote affects the policy and whether or not that's a good idea or not, ever since I've been in the legislature, typically once a year, and there is some issue that comes up regarding policies on the good college over the hill. And I would submit to you that, you know, we pay for basically one half of all of those dollars out of general funds. We should be affecting policy. That's one of our fundamental obligations and duties, is to help guide and direct the policy of UW. And we take that directive personally, and it's important that we assert our policy on UW because we are one of the primary funders of it. So when things are going awry over the hill and we don't like them, we have the option and I would say the responsibility to affect some policies. And so one of the policy issues that we've discussed over time is that the look and makeup of that campus and whether or not it's going to be a cohesive unit as a campus like other universities, or it's going to be split down the middle where you have folks running back and forth across the street. And, you know, there's numerous accidents along 15th every year, and there's been some very tragic ones. But it's just a policy issue, and you're right, it is a policy issue. But I would respectfully state that we have that ability and we have that responsibility to do so. With regards to the additional cut to the community colleges and to our 1 4-year college, they know that this was coming in our discussions with them. And if you recall in the opening statements, I talked about the $249 million that the chief executive created through his executive cuts. That was short by about $100 million for biennium expenses. And so it was the understanding with most agencies and with the colleges that there are likely to be additional cuts coming up because all told, really, it's closer to a 10 or probably a 12% cut in order to fix our structural deficit. So this is how we're getting there, and everyone that we can, we wrap on the umbrella and they share their piece of the pie in those reductions.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad the good chair of JC brought up the policy that's starting to creep into our budget bill. I look at this section as just rot with policy statements that I think we're overreaching well past where we need to be, especially under the definition of a budget bill. If we want to discuss policy with that institution over the hill or bring changes, you know, we have an avenue for that. Those are called bills, and we bring them and we vet them thoroughly through this body and through interim committees and that sort of thing. I'm just troubled at some of these things that I see here that are directives to the university over the hill inside their budget bill. And I think that they should be removed, and I'll look seriously at that. But we should refrain from this when we go through this budget bill. It's about financing the state, making us run, and the finances of the state. Policy and money should be two separate things.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I disagree with the last statement. With money comes policy. With money comes strings. And I go back a few years as a newer legislator, and I don't run many budget amendments, but I ran a budget amendment that had a small contingency on the use of some funds that asked the university, strongly suggested that the university and the community colleges get together and align their curriculum so that there'd be a smoother transition between those two groups. And lo and behold, just that little policy suggestion, just something that simple, was very effective. I want to say within months of us getting out of session, they had aligned 12 or so different curriculums so that our students, our Wyoming students, could go to the community college, attend 2 years, go down to the university, and be on track to graduate in 4 years. That was this body, because the whole body voted on it, directing policy that was associated with the funding that goes to the university. It's not out of line. As a matter of fact, some really good things have come out of ideas that have come from this body in the form of a policy direction to the university.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And a reminder, you know, we fund all of the construction on that campus, the state of Wyoming. And so I think it's within our purview to ensure that these two entities get together and have a discussion about how to go forward, because ultimately we, the people of Wyoming, pick up a whole lot of this tab. So I think it's in our interest to ensure that there's good communication and good cooperation, so that tab isn't any bigger than it needs to be.
Further discussion on Section 67? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move to close Section 67 and call for the question.
On question being called, all in favor of Section 67, University of Wyoming, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 67 is passed, committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 68, Wichee. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 69. I move Section 69, the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, also known as WICHE, page 18 on your summary sheet and page 56 in your bill. Mr. Chairman, the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education provides educational opportunities for Wyoming residents who want to attend health professional schools that are not available in Wyoming. So it contributes to the state's healthcare workforce, since participants are required to provide 3 years of service in the state or pay back their tuition. The JAC accepted the governor's recommendation to cut $415,674, which is 8% of the grant budget, and will eliminate funding for about 15 to 20 student slots. There are no personnel associated with this agency, and I'll take questions or move to close.
Question being called. All those in favor of Section 69, Wichee, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 69 is passed, committee of the whole. We're now on the Section 70, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I move Section 70, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission, page 18 on your summary sheet, page 67 on your bill. Mr. Chairman, the chief executive's reductions to this agency cut $548,330, which represents about a 9% reduction. The chief executive's reductions included the enterprise reductions, the plus commissioner travel reductions, and reductions to the UW faculty research. JAC also removed $500,000 general fund for UW faculty research and technical outreach. JAC added back $250,000 from the Business Council Business Ready Communities. So the net difference of all of those actions, the $500,000 removal and the $250,000 back in, the net difference after the chief executive and JAC action is $4.75 million per biennium for research and technical outreach rather than the $5.5 million that was there before. And I would take any questions. Seeing no questions, I would move to close Section 70 and call for the question.
Question being called. All in favor of Section 70, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 70 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 77, Enterprise Technology Services. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 077, Enterprise Technology Services, which is page 19 on your summary sheet and page 68 in your bill. The governor's recommendations included the elimination of 29 positions and the enterprise reductions. JAC accepted the governor's recs and also eliminated three more positions, which, as a side note, makes a cumulative reduction of 16% of FTEs since the agency was created in the 2013-14 biennium. So total reduction in general funds to this agency is $2,294,706. And are there any questions? If not, Mr. Chairman, I move to close the Office of Enterprise Technology Services.
Question being called on Section 77. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 77 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on the Section 80, Department of Corrections. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 80, Department of Corrections. That, folks, that's found on page 69 of your budget bill and page 19 of your summary. The JEC adopted all of the governor's recs and took out some additional, eliminated some additional positions and unfunded positions. We added, when the dust settled, the total general fund reductions to the Department of Corrections was $22,435,067. We eliminated four full-time positions and removed funds from 122 vacant funded positions. We added footnote 5 on your summary sheet, which authorizes the department to keep up to $2 million of excess general fund money that would normally revert back to the general fund. This extra money can be used for the major maintenance and repair concerns that we know exist at the penitentiary. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions, and if there are none, I'd move to close Section 80.
Question being called. All those in favor of Section 80, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Section 80 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 81, Board of Parole. Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Section 81, Board of Parole, as found on page 71 of your bill, page 20 of your summary sheet. JAC adopted the governor's recs, and we changed on note 1. We changed one full-time employee to a part-time employee. And with that, I'd answer any questions. If there are none, I'd move to close Section 81, Board of Parole.
Question being called on Section 81. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 81, Board of Parole has passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 085, Wyoming Business Council, which is page 20 on your summary sheet and page 72 in your bill. Mr. Chairman, the purpose of this agency is to improve the business and industrial readiness of our communities, encourage business starts and expansion, grow the technology sector, and improve the livability of communities. The governor's recommendations included the standard enterprise reductions, elimination of two positions, reduction in grants to attend trade shows, reduction in funding for business assistance, for example, I can just put as a personal note, search engine optimization review, which I used for my own business, and recruiting activities, that was $585,000, and a cut of $3 million in grants or loans to communities for public infrastructure. In addition, the JAC eliminated another position, which you can see as your note 1, and then combining your summary sheet notes 2 and 3 took $2.5 million from this agency to fund the governor's Endow initiative instead of making an additional appropriation as the governor had requested. And we also reduced another $250,000 from the business-ready community grants and loans. I would point out that since the 2009-2010 biennium, we have cut this agency in half. And are there any questions?
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, there are questions. I did see you cut the agency in half. And I looked for was the number of employees, and it's got a bunch of zeros down there. And it said, after talking to some people, they say, well, we don't, they can pick their own amount or with the governor's approval or something, and they take it right out of the aggregate amount of funds that they get. And then I got more concerned about it and wanted to know how many employees it took to pass out. I think it was $102 million the last biennium. Now they're at $61 million. And to analyze that fully, it turns out that my numbers indicate that with $102 million, they had 45 employees, and with 61 million, they got 40 employees. So they've lowered it by five employees. And I don't know if those are all filled positions or if there is. But it looks to me like the percentage of money that this program has available, the percentage going to labor is higher than it was the last biennium. So did your committee do much analysis of excess employees possibly being in this program?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the FTEs not showing up, that is correct. Because of the structure of this agency, the positions are funded from the 900 series rather than the 100 series, so that's why you don't see them there. As far as doing a budget dollar per capita FTE, I don't recall that we did that, although some other person may have some comment on that, and I can assess that certainly and provide that information later.
Further discussion on Section 85 of the budget. Chairman Nicholas.
I would note that we had those exact same questions. And it's not in their budget book, but if you go to their website, you can see how their staffing is broke down. And I can't remember what the number, but I think something like 23 to 24 actually work within the community grant process. And then they have seven or eight or nine other little mini responsibilities, like a community assessment thing, a manufacturing works council. There's a whole handful of them that they're required by statute to operate and to run and do a bunch of other things. And so we looked at it. We're not saying they're not top-heavy to some degree, but they definitely have a bunch of other responsibilities over and above just managing the business-ready community grants.
Further discussion on Section 85. Chairman Madden.
Just two other things. Did any employees follow that $2.5 million or whatever it was, or went to the endowed, or I guess it's $1.2 million went to endowed? Did any employees go with that? And also, there is no 100 series here, but is there any reason why we couldn't make a 100 series there, like we do with the other programs and agencies that we have?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The endow, we took separately $1.25 million from two separate locations for the total of $2.5 million, and that was just funding. There will be a new section for that. We didn't transfer any positions to that. And as far as structurally, if we could put them in the 100 rather than the 900, the establishment of this agency was before my time in the legislature, so I have to say I don't know why we set it up that way. Maybe someone with a longer term like you would know.
Further discussion, Chairman Nicholas.
So the business council is set up like a business, and so they have a chief executive officer. They don't have a director. And so there are no 100 or 200 series because they run it like a business, and what they pay their staff, they run like a business and kind of like an enterprise indoor business. And so, so we don't actually manage their 100 and 200 series. All we can do is take money in and take money out. If you want to go in and modify that, you've got to change their whole internal structure and how they report to the legislature and how they function.
Further discussion on Section 85? Seeing none and question being called, all those in favor of Section 85, the House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 101, Supreme Court. Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the following agency budgets: 101, Supreme Court; 103, Commission of Judicial Conduct and Ethics; 120, Judicial District 1A. 121, Judicial District 1B, 122, Judicial District 2A, 123, Judicial District 2B, 124, Judicial District 3B, 125, Judicial District 3A, 126, Judicial District 4, 127, Judicial District 5A, 128, Judicial District 5B, 129, Judicial District 6A, 130, Judicial District 7A, 131, Judicial District 7B, 132, Judicial District 9A, 133, Judicial District 8A, 134, Judicial District 9B, 135, Judicial District 6B, 136, Judicial District 8B, 137, Laramie County District 1C, 138, Sweetwater County District 3C, 139, Natrona County District 7C, 140, Judicial District 6C, 141, Judicial District 9C, 142, Judicial District 4B. These budgets appear on page 73 through 90 of the budget bill and pages 21 through 29 of the summary sheet. Mr. Chairman, the governor's recommendation for the supplemental budget reduced Agency 101 by $1,178,195 in general fund dollars from the 2017-18 budget bill, which represents a 2% reduction to the general fund 2017-18 budget bill. JAC adopted the governor's rec for Agency 101 with further cuts. JAC adopted the governor's enterprise reduction of $953,843. JAC adopted the governor's 200 series reduction of $40,000. JAC adopted the governor's 900 series reductions for judicial districts of $39,000, and finally, Mr. Chairman, JC adopted the governor's recommendation of one full-time vacant position for $145,352. Mr. Chairman, the governor's recommendation for the supplemental budget reduced Agency 103 by $10,022 in general fund from this 2017-18 budget bill, which represents a 2.7% reduction to the general fund 2017-18 budget bill. JAC adopted the governor's rec for Agency 103 without further cuts. JAC adopted the governor's enterprise reduction of $2,675. JAC adopted the governor's 200 series reduction of $1,500. And finally, Mr. Chairman, JAC adopted the governor's 900 series reduction for judicial districts of $5,847. Mr. Chairman, the governor's recommendation for the supplemental budget reduced agencies 120 through 142 by $790,157 in general fund dollars from the 2017-18 budget bill, which represents a 3% reduction to the general fund 2017-18 budget bill. JAC adopted the governor's rec for agencies 120 through 142 without further cuts. JAC adopted the governor's enterprise reduction of $690,157. JC adopted the governor's 200 series reduction of $72,500. And finally, Mr. Chairman, JC adopted the governor's 900 series reduction for judicial districts of $27,500. If there are no questions, Mr. Chairman, I would move to close sections 101, 103, and sections 120 through 142.
Any discussion? No discussion and question being called. The motion is to move sections 101, 103, and 120 through 142. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. All those sections carry. We're now up to Section 151, District Attorney of the 1st Judicial District. Mr. Vice Chairman Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Sections 151, 157, District Attorneys for Judicial District 1 and 7. JC adopted the Governor's enterprise reductions and made no other changes in either of these two sections. I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion?
Seeing no questions, I move to close.
The question is on Sections 151 and 157 of House Bill 1. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Sections 151 and 157 have passed Committee of the Whole. We're now in the Section 167, UW Medical Education. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 167, UW Medical Education, which is page 30 on your summary sheet and page 92 in your bill. Mr. Chairman, this has three components. First, the Family Practice Residency Program, located in two clinic sites. This is the only medical residency program in Wyoming and produces 14 new family practice doctors a year, and more than 120 practicing physicians in Wyoming graduated from one of these programs. The residency program also provides safety net health care to thousands of low-income patients. Second, we have WAMI, which is the route by which Wyoming students can attend medical student school at the University of Washington. Their first year takes place in Laramie, the second in Seattle, and the last 2 years rotate throughout the five-state region. The students repay their tuition benefit if they don't return to Wyoming after medical school. And then third, Wyoming pays for students to attend dental school in Nebraska. The governor's recommendations included the following: the standard enterprise reductions, the elimination of three positions by closing the family practice satellite clinic in Pine Bluffs, a reduction from 10 dental students to 7 dental students, which is a total of 32 down to 28 over their years, and the replacement of general fund revenue with clinic revenue, which is partially federal funds due to a new CMS qualification. In addition, JAC authorized a $350,000 increase in one-time spending authority, not money, but just the authority to spend their own funds for clinic revenue to be spent on remodeling a pharmacy at the Cheyenne site. No additional funding is needed from the legislature for that project. So there is a decrease of $3,399,655 in general fund and an increase of $2,560,173 in clinic revenue. And, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions, I would move to close UW Medical Education.
Question being called. All those in favor of Section 167, UW Medical Education, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 167 is passed, Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 205, Education School Finance. Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think we're running out of batteries, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 205, Education School Finance, page 30 on your summary sheet and page 94 of your bill. Mr. Chairman, your JAC adopted the superintendent's letter number 1, which is a request for $72,550,955 in school foundation dollars in order to balance school finance as the local tax revenues decline. So remember, as the local tax input declines, the state's input increases. And so this is a balance budget balancer. And, Mr. Chairman, if House Bill 38 passes, if you remember, right now we're charging ourselves 6% interest to make this kind of this interfund loan. And so if House Bill 38 passes, this will reduce this amount by $35 million. And it's really just an accounting, it's just an accounting piece, a balance budgeter, or a budget balancer. It's hard to say those two. Are there any questions? If there are no questions, I would move to close Section 205.
Seeing no questions and question being called on Section 205, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Section 205 is apparently passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 206, Department of Education. Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 206, Department of Education. This is found on page 97 of your bill and page 20 of your summary sheets. I think, page 31 of your summary sheet, sorry. JAC has adopted The governor's direct reduced general fund dollars and appropriations to the Department of Education by $1.8 million. JAC, by its actions, added back one AWAC position for the purpose of filling the state board coordinator position. $84,500 of school foundation money that was in the agency's accountability and communications division was moved from that division to fund that coordinator position. You'll see that on note one. And then again, that same amount, that $84,500 used for that coordinator position was removed from the accountability division, along with another $250,000 reduction to that same division. The sums of those two equal that $334,500 amount that you'll make note of in notes two and three on your summary sheet. The JAC eliminated an additional vacant full-time position. And lastly, the JAC reduced $250,000 from the school support and individual learning division. These were in the school foundation funds also, and will go back into the foundation fund. You'll make that note. You'll see that in note five of your summary sheet. The total supplemental budget general fund reductions to the Department of Ed was $2,495,699, with a reduction of five full-time positions and two part-time positions. And Mr. Chairman, if there aren't any questions, I'd move to close Section 206.
Seeing no discussion and question being called, all those in favor of Section 206, Department of Education, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 206 is passed, Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 211, the Board of Equalization. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I move Section 211, Board of Equalization, page 28 on your summary sheet, page 100 on your bill. Mr. Chairman, the chief executive reductions to this agency cut what I think might be the largest cut you'll see all day, and $3,628 were cut from this agency, which represents a 0.2% reduction. This small agency, six full-time positions, all of the cuts were limited to the governor's enterprise reductions, health insurance, rate holiday, the Converse County regional adjustment, and absence of increase in health insurance premiums this calendar year. So it is a small reduction, small agency, and I'd take any questions.
Representative Brown?
Just a quick question, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where were these taken out of? Was this out of what series was this taken out of?
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was the chief executive's enterprise reduction, which was the health insurance, the Converse County regional adjustment, and the health insurance premium for the calendar year. So it was that enterprise reduction that every agency took part in.
Seeing
no more questions, I would move to close Section 211 and call for the question on the Board of Equalization.
All those in favor of Section 211, Board of Equalization, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 211 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now in Section 220, Environmental Quality Council. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 220, Environmental Quality Council, page 100 on the bill, page 32 on the summary sheet. JAC accepted the governor's enterprise reductions and made no other changes to this agency. I'll stand for questions. Seeing no questions, I move to close Section 220.
Question being called. All those in favor of Section 220, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 220 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now into Section 38, Paramutual Commission. Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it is my pleasure to bring the final entity and move to open Section 38, the Paramutual Commission. The Paramutual Commission has oversight over both live racing and historic racing in the state. Total wagers over $238 million. The takeout from that's over $18 million. And their revenues are, on the average, about $3 million a year, which makes them totally self-funded. The JAC adopted the governor's recommendation to add three new positions for a total of approximately $418,000 to provide better oversight over this growing wagering population. And if there are no questions, I move to close Section 38.
See no discussion. Question being called. All in favor of Section 38, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 38 is passed Committee of the Whole. We're now on to Section 300. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks like you got A little over four more minutes for your second reading amendments, if you're going to get them in. I'll try not to trip you on your way through if you bring them up. So we're going to walk through the 300s, and hopefully this won't take too long. If you'd go to page 102 in the bill and page 33 of the summary sheet, and I'll just kind of walk through these by section on the first part of these section 300s. So K, what are we doing in section K here? Basically, we are providing a safety net for our chief executive officer. In the event that we have another catastrophic stock market failure or some other component of our funding mechanisms where Craig will meet and they can, and if they meet, be called by the governor or by others, and if there is more than $100 million budget deficit in the Craig report, then this allows a transfer of $104 million over into the SRA in order for the governor to cover that type of a catastrophic event. And before I go on, Mr. Chairman, I'd move Section 300 and ask for your favorable consideration and continue with the explanation. So that's what K does. And you may recall that the statutory reserve account, the governor is required to ask to be filled, but we're not obligated to fill it. And it's already been expended. So that those monies are gone right now. So this is a backstop in case there is another situation where those funds just have to be expended. But we put the sideboards on it so that we just don't have another $104 million out there that you have at his disposal without some type of event occurring that necessitates the reason to dip into that kind of those funds. That's basically what we're doing in subsection K. Then if we go to subsection M, what this is a prevention of the TIPS. So right now, in the Permanent Mental Trust Fund Reserve account, at the end of each year, there's a TIP that goes back into the corpus of the account. If we have a certain amount of realized capital gains at the end of the year. So what this does is it eliminates that TIP. Now, it's highly, highly unlikely that we're going to have the type of unrealized capital gains for that to actually happen. I mean, literally, we'd have to have between now and the end of the year, we'd have to have $200 or $300 million in realized capital gains. So it'd have to be a major super increase in a spike in the stock market for that to happen. But just in case that happens, we're saying because of our economic times right now, we don't want it to tip over this year. We'll wait till the next year when we come back here and decide if the tips are appropriate. So that's all we're doing in M. And similarly, we're doing the same thing in N. The difference with N is this is the tip that is in the Common School Permanent Fund Reserve account, which is again tipped over if the realized capital gains at the end of the year are so high that tips over into the corpus of the account. So both of these things, we're just saying, just to be safe, we're going to capture those tips because if we have that kind of income, we want to be able to use that income to address our budget shortfalls, our education issues, and those types of things. So it's just a safety measure to do that. Then going to O. And O, we've already talked about, and when I bring it up, you'll understand what we're doing. But the easiest way to understand O is to go to your goldenrod on page 4. And what happens is we're taking funds from the Permanent Land Fund holding account, and we're transferring up to the school foundation account. Now, you may remember that the school foundation account is basically the general fund for education. And in order to continue to fund education for our next fiscal year, we need this is the money we're talking about, the $567 million that we're taking from the holding account, transferring it up to the general fund, which is the school foundation account, in order that we can continue to fund education. So this is just the mechanism on the goldenrod So if you go to the bottom of the page 4, you see the PLF holding account, and you'll see the balance fund in there is $567 million. So all we're doing is putting a circle around that and moving that up to the balance sheet at the top of the page, which is the school foundation account. So that's what this language does, and it allows us to fund education. If we didn't do this, the Department of Education would have to go in and borrow the funds from somebody, and basically there's no place to borrow it from other than Herman Trust Fund or some other account. So this is basically the only way we can continue operations without putting our financial dollars at risk, because if we use the funds from any other source, that would put the treasurer in a position where he's got to go and cash out a bunch of funds in order to just continue the fundings of operations. So this is in the holding account. The other name is for this is called the eLISRA, or the rainy day account for education. So this is the rainy day account that we created in 2010 to cover education versus the rainy day account on the general fund side. And we're expending it now in order to fund education and survive while we go through this process with 236 on this side and 165 on the Senate side and come up with a mechanism to fund education. This is what we're doing. And with that regards, then if you look at on the same sheet, just so for your clarification, on page 4, you'll see we've got a placeholder. It's at the bottom of the first column. There's a $470,000 placement in there. That number is just a placeholder, and that placeholder basically represents how much we fund education through House Bill 236 and 165. And the 470 basically is suggesting that there may be a $60 or $70 or $80 million drop in the funding on whatever bill comes out. We don't know what that number is, so that number really is just a placeholder that's holding off until we come up with an education bill. So that's just and we'll go into a little bit more explanation tomorrow or sometime at the end of this week, perhaps, just to walk through the goldenrod a little bit closer. And then finally on P, so you go over to page 104, section P. This is, if you go to, once again on page 4, you go to the down to the middle of the page, total balance on the school foundation account, there's $100 million there, you'll see that right in the middle of the page. So statutorily, we're required to keep $100 million in this account as kind of a backdrop. And if money pours into that at the end of the year, then that money that pours in raises that over $100 million, then goes down to the school capital construction account. So what P does, it prevents that tip. So this is another tip prevention. Just in case there happens to be more than $100 million in the school foundation program account, so it's just like on the previous page, it's just a catch-all or to catch that tip. So, if there's any other questions on this section 300,
discussion on section 300. Question being called. All those in favor of section 300, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 300 is passed committee of the whole. We're now on to section 305. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 305B, the JC adopted the governor's recommendation to reduce the appropriation for retiree health insurance benefits by $296,000, leaving $3.3 million and a little change, and modified Section B accordingly. What happened here is that more than the anticipated number of retirees fermented out of the system and headed to the last roundup. So that's the reason for the reduction. This insurance is to cover those retirees who retired prior to 2008, and it shows up in each budget. It is not statutory. It's purely budget-related. If there are no questions,
Seeing no question, the question being called, all those in favor of Section 305, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 305 is passed committee of the whole. We're now in 306.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas.
I would move to open Section 306, and I will provide an explanation of 306. Ladies and gentlemen, this is pretty simple. Basically, what we did here is on the cuts that were made to the Department of Ag, it requires them to take those cuts out of 100 and 200 series positions. So if there are no other questions, I would move for the question.
Question being called. All in favor of Section 306, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 306 is passed committee of the whole. We're now into Section 309. Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would move Section 309 and ask for your favorable consideration. I'm going to read this one, I think it's, and then I'm going to explain it, Mr. Chairman. If the unencumbered, unobligated balance of the Excellence in Higher Education Endowment Reserve account is less than $2,500,000 on September 30th, 2017, there is appropriated from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account up to $1,250,000 as necessary so that the unencumbered, unobligated balance in the Excellence in Higher Education Endowment Reserve account is $2,500,000. This appropriation shall be deposited to the Excellence in Higher Education Endowment Reserve account no later than September 30th, 2017. So I'm going to back you up to House Bill 79. And in House Bill 79, if you remember, we were discussing all those policy reserve accounts and policy. We looked at all the various places that we have these spending policy accounts on these permanent accounts. And so one account that was created back when the Hathaway was created is this Excellence in Higher Education Endowment Fund. And with that was created a spending policy off of that. And what has happened over time, because it had a trip, it had some trips in it that did not allow that reserve account and we basically to grow to the right level. And so we have guaranteed that 5% to cover these endowed shares. So what this funds is that it funds 18 UW endowed chairs and it funds 2 endowed chairs per community college. And so what happened by guaranteeing this 5% is our reserve account shrunk down to where we don't have enough to cover the balance. And that's because our investments aren't up to speed right now. And so if the 5% spending policy hasn't been met by the reserve account, this program at UW will run out of money by January 18th. And so what we've done is instead of funding the full $2.5 million, what we said, okay, is we will fund $1,250,000 out of the LISRA, and then community colleges and UW, you come up with the other. And this was part of these positions, I believe, and I've kind of asked our good leader in LSO on this, but part of these positions I know in UW I'm pretty sure are actually in statute. So what this does is if we don't do this, these chairs, you know, we lose these endowed chairs, so we want to bridge this. And then remember, House Bill 79 is going to increase the limit on that reserve account. It kind of shrinks that spending policy, and we ensure that the trip doesn't to the permanent account doesn't occur as fast as it did in the past. So we're trying to, in House Bill 79, we're trying to fix the problem that created this. But in the short term, we're trying to fix this immediate problem with this appropriation.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this, I need some more information, if possible, on the number of positions that this endowment fund is financing, and how it's changed over time. Most of it is tied up in salaries, and salaries go up, and along with salaries, you have fringe benefits that go up, and it goes on and on. So I'm wondering if you've done an analysis to see if they're over appropriating what this endowment fund is capable of generating in the long term. And I was in your meeting the other day when you were talking about this, and then I had a run, so maybe you talked about that and you can give me some complete answers. But I think the real secret is to have not ask that fund to do quite so much funding of positions as they have in the past, because they go up in cost all the time.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my question is, when the presenter was providing some explanation on the this section, there was a discussion about that the entities, the two entities of higher education, would have to make up for differences, but I don't see that in this actual section. I see the state ponying up 1.25, but I don't see any obligation on those entities, and I think that was referenced in the testimony, so I'd like some clarification on that, please.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So the amount that they're going to be short is the $2,500,000, that's my understanding. And what we are ponying up is the $1,250,000. As it relates to the good chair of revenues question is, and I can't remember exactly what we ended up with in House Bill 79. Perhaps the good speaker will relay that along. But we tried to fix that whole spending policy on this in House Bill 79 to ensure that this doesn't happen again. And once again, the number of positions, as I understand it, and I don't have that position list over time, so I can't give you that. I can find that out, but I don't know that right now. But right now, from what I understand, is UW has 18 positions of these endowed chairs, and there are two endowed chairs per community college. So the look over time, I will have to get back to the good chair of revenue on that.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's I would remind the body that House Bill 55 was actually, House Bill 55 was the spending policy amendments. And I think the good chairman of revenue hit on that. These are salaries. That's what they're for. And when he said that we need to look at requiring less of the fund, and that's exactly what we did in House Bill 55, is that we reduced the spending policy from the 5% down to 4.75, I believe. And then we also required that the university and community colleges within that 4.75, they can only spend 90% of that. They have to start creating their own reserve account. And then the third thing we did with this fund was we moved the reserve account. This was the one that got left out a couple of years ago when we moved them from 75 to 90%. Now in House Bill 55, I think we moved them to 150. So we've moved that reserve account to 150. So what happened was we were using the full 5%, and we had a very bad investment year, and we had a small reserve account. And so that's why we're trying to correct that problem, and really three ways on this. So I think House Bill 55 will help solve that moving forward.
Chairman Nicholas?
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that is the reason that the good representative from the west side of the wind said House Bill 79, because that's the number I gave him, and I gave him the wrong number. It was 55. So the real issue is that 4.75, is that low enough? And the answer is probably not. But our concept was we'll have to revisit that next year or end the next year to allow them to start to build up their reserve, but basically just not cut them off at the knees. And the 5% that they're spending, it's statutory. So they're directed to spend 5% for these endowed positions. And so they have the contracts out. They're obligated for these funds. And so that's why we normally, JC isn't always so friendly. But we said, look, this is our responsibility because this is the statutory language that requires them to spend 5% for these positions. And they're contracted for. So we said, well, we'll take it down a step to 4.75, make you start the reserve account, and then next year or the next year, let them know that 4.75 may very well go down to 0.45 or 4.5 or even lower. So it's our way to get to where we need to go to make this thing self-funded and take care of our obligations.
Further discussion on Section 309?
Mr. Majority Whip?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move to close Section 309 if there are no further comments and call for question.
Question being called. All in favor of Section 309, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Section 309 passes committee of the whole. We're now into Section 313. Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Section 313, page 33 on the summary sheet, page 106 on the budget bill. It's kind of confusing to read, so I'm not going to read it to you, but I'm going to describe the action that was taken. So if the bill that is coming to our house currently passes, then this program in Dow will be created and started. And the way this will be funded is we will spend $1.25 million from the Business Council's administrative side and $1.25 million from the Business Council Business Ready Communities to fund this program. There are no positions that came with this. As the question was asked earlier, it is just a funding mechanism for this if this bill is to pass. Any questions? If not, I would move to close Section 313.
Seeing no discussion, question being called. All those in favor, Section 313 to House Bill 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 313 has passed committee of the whole. We're now into Section 320. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Section 320 and ask for your move to open and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, it looks kind of confusing, but it's actually fairly easy to kind of describe what it does. And let's start with how much money this will save. This is a hard freeze on all state employees. And by doing so, and eliminating 75 positions, what we do is we save a combined estimated $17 million in this biennium. 12 of that is just from the freeze itself, and $5.6 million is from the elimination of 75 positions. So that's this is one of our largest hammers in this budget bill to control the costs of government. And that turns into next year, or next biennium, 1920, to a roughly $26 million in cuts from our general fund dollars. So how do we get there? Number one, we get there with a hard freeze, and that's what subsection A is. It talks about it picks a time and place, and from that moment forward, that's going to be the number of state employees that through June of 2018. What we did is we allowed the governor, instead of we give him that hard freeze on that number, but then if you go over to the next page, you'll see that we give him some flex in that capability. So if there's a need, he can do a couple different things. Number one, he can eliminate programs or other types of funded items under the general fund dollars, the equivalent of which would be these certain 75 positions. The 75 positions you'll see at the bottom of in subsection Romanet I, that's $75,023. That's the average payroll for one position in the in the general fund for state employment. So we peg that 75 positions at that number. So when he makes these cuts of 75 positions over the next through the rest of this biennium, he can cut a program or some component of an agency and offset that cut with this amount of dollars as the equivalency for what that position is by making those program cuts. So he cuts 75 positions or he cuts programs and expenditures that equate to that same number, which is that $5.6 million. That $5.6 million is $75,000. Times 75. So that's how that number is created. We then also give the governor the ability to fill positions that are critical to state government. So, basically the concept is he can eliminate these positions by attrition. He can do it by a RIF. But typically there's a large amount of turnover in state government every month. So he will be able to fill positions through vacancies as they evolve. But some of those vacancies may be emergency folks. They may be positions that you simply have to fill. So what we gave the superflex to the governor so that he can go move one position over to the vacant position so that the important positions remain filled with other positions from other places. So it's 75 positions. He can find them where he wants to get them. And he can be, and in, on that hard freeze, he can continue to fill the ones that have to be filled as long as he does a representative a reduction at some other position. So that's part of the hard freeze and part of the reduction of 75. So I think I'll just take any questions on that because I see there may be one. And
Vice Chairman Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the 75 cuts and how that goes about being set up, I'm not against the idea, but I'm curious as to why are we giving or having the authority handed down to the governor in order to handle this situation instead of doing it ourselves. They've got the opportunity to cut a program that can make up for that. It seems like we've set out the plan and we've got the idea. Why not do it?
Vice Chairman Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm just a little confused as to whether these are actual people or these are positions that are kind of fluid or how this is all going to work, and could you address that? And also with that, could you let us know how many positions with actual people were cut in this budget and how many positions that were vacant were cut? Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you. These are not, well, there are actual positions that will be cut. Whether or not they are live bodies depends on the actions of the chief executive. And the whole concept behind this section 320 was to say, look, you're the chief executive. You know much better than we do where cuts in your agencies that you supervise should be, where those reductions should take place. We've gone through, we went through agency by agency by agency, both this session and last session, and just cut vacant positions. And at some point in time, we have to say, look, if we just continue to cut positions, we don't know the damage that's going to be caused in each particular agency. We don't know and what are more important in terms of those agencies or which are not. And, the issue is, well, do we come in and just do a 2.5% cut in addition to the 8% cut and enforce them to do that through Section 100s and 200s? A lot of agencies can't bear that. A lot of these agencies are 1, 3, 5, or 6, or 9 FTE agencies, and if you lose one, they lose the ability to operate and to function. And so we come down here, we, as legislators, we're citizen legislators. How do we know which agency is the appropriate one to cut and what position to cut out of those agencies? On JAC, in the course of the last 2.5 or 3 weeks, we have just about every agency come before us, and we have about 15 to 20 minutes to spend on each agency and maybe an hour and a half to spend on the large agencies. And that's the full amount of information that we have to determine, well, this is where we're going to cut positions. So the fact is, it's the responsibility of the chief executive and the responsibility of the director of each agency to know where cuts should be made. So we're saying, chief executive, directors of these agencies, you make the cuts. We're just telling you the number of cuts that you're going to make, and we're going to hard freeze the state government and those agencies between now and June 2018. So we give them the maximum flexibility to come up with this additional $17 million in cuts to the biennium, $26 million for 19-20. And with this, in addition to the, if you combine it to the other cuts that we've instituted in this budget bill, we're at $50 million more or less in this biennium, and we're at $100 million in the 19-20 biennium. And so, but this also is the most effective way to do it, and do it in with a scalpel, with the folks that know what they're doing and how to do it, versus us just saying you're going to cut 2.5%. So it's a bit creative. It's a little bit unorthodox, if you might say, but also it gives maximum flexibility over time to the governor to accommodate vacancies, to accommodate the agencies themselves, particularly the little ones, So if you got a little agency that loses a position, he can take one from a large one and just kind of map things around to make sure that the government operates as effectively and as efficiently as possible. And I don't have the complete total number of bodies. It's pretty similar to the handout that we passed out last week. So it's around 704 odd positions that are hard bodies that are roughly eliminated over time through all the cuts, including the governor's cuts that went back to June of 2016.
Mr. Speaker, or Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just help answer that question as well. The JAC, we cut approximately 53 positions. Live bodies, we technically only did about three, and that was through the livestock board, livestock investigators when we did that. So the rest of it was just in positions this year, but there's a whole handout that came out earlier this week or late last week that shows all of the reductions to community colleges, UW, what was reduced in positions last year, and et cetera. So if you don't have that, you can come take a look at my copy.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also just, and I want to say it in a very, in the proper way, our own legal opinions, I think, from our own staff and others, that we're very careful as the appropriations branch not to target a specific position. And the JAC works hard at that, to not look at this position number in this agency and draw a red line through it, because there are problems with that and the separation of powers. And so if you look over also on page 108, and you can see where some of that gets to that on line 8. And so that's how these are generally kind of taken care of. And so there's an issue. It's always this dance of separation of powers. And so you won't see any of that really in this budget, where there's just this position, this specific position, and this position. Frankly, we're not, it's getting close to the edge on that. And so what we do is appropriate the money and talk about the positions generally, not specifically. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the part of the direction of JAC as far as targeting 75 positions, and I'm okay with not exactly looking at those positions right now, because I think that our chief executive does have more flex and he's able to look at this year round, whereas we're here only part of the year. However, the part that gives me heartburn with this really is on page 108, and that's Romanette 2. And I really have that whole paragraph gives me some heartburn. First of all, you look at that, it was just mentioned that number, we're going to count each employee as worth around $75,000, or each position $75,000. And when we've gone through that summary sheet, we've seen time and time again that JAC reduces position, and it seemed like more often than not that those positions were worth more than $100,000 when you consider not only their wage, but then the taxes that go into that, and then also health care and all that kind of stuff. So all of that is attributed to part of that wage, and yet we're bringing it down to $75,000, and that seems to be just real cheap, to be quite frank. It seems that number should be higher. So that's number one. But number two, and this is the real problem that I have with this, is that we're allowing the chief executive to in lieu of identifying those 75 positions, we're saying that you can continue to cut programs and services. And I'm okay if that if it's a government program where we eliminate positions, but that's not what I see. What I see happening instead is we're going to start seeing more cuts to prevention intervention. We're going to see cuts to DD waivers. We're going to see those kind of cuts. And we're going to see government remain intact as far as employees are concerned, and yet we're going to see services reduced. And that's how I see this playing out. At the end of the day, when we come to this date, whatever this date is on here, I can't recall what it is, but what I see happening is maybe there's a total of 10, maybe 15 positions that were cut from the state, and then the rest of it is services to our people. And that is completely backwards. And so I'd like to know, just if the good JAC could talk about that, and if that entered into the discussion at all, because that's just how I see this playing out. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Vice Chairman Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a reminder to the body, and some may not be aware, that when a position is funded, the money stays with the position, not the person. So if it's vacant, the appropriation stays there. So in eliminating a vacant position, we eliminate the appropriation, and the money thus isn't spent or allocated. So whether or not there's a human being in that doesn't really affect it. And that we're after the money, not the people, where it's available.
Vice Chairman Hallerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need some assurance or that those employees classified as permanent, are they pretty much protected from this?
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you. Let me, first of all, the in terms of who's protected, the answer is that's really up to the chief executive, but no one is protected by it. The if he wants to go riff somebody, that he can do it. But let me go back and kind of explain this a little bit better because it helps go to that the issue of whether or not we're cutting services or not. So of this $17 million that we're saving in this biennium, $5.6 million of that are those reduction, those the loss of those 75 positions. $12 million of that comes from the hard freeze. So, and the hard freeze means no new employees. And so, if you think about that, that means that as people, if you're not refilling positions and vacant positions, you're not getting rid of services. You're getting rid of employees and paying for those employees. And so the major component and the, kind of the thing that we really liked about this hard freeze is it's really more directed at filling new and vacant positions than it is that, you know, then reducing services. So by having less employees, you actually would have, you still have funding within the agency to fund services if you choose. But the hard freeze is the key to that because that's $12 million. In 1920, the hard freeze represents $15 million of that total $26 million cut. And so it's the most effective way to go in and say, look, you're going to hard freeze this. You're not going to bring in new employees. And that will necessitate, if you will, those agencies doing a better job with less. So it's but also allows it to happen by attrition. And so by retirements, by whatever what you will, it's just a mechanism to get there. And the last issue is only $75,000. That's an annual number. So if you biannualize it for a position, it's $150,000. So biannually, that we're taking away $150,000 per employee.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my question goes to the definition that that's being utilized for generally funded full-time position. And my query is what percentage of the state's employees fall into that definition? So I can actually have some idea of what level of the workforce, and if there's a tendency for some agencies to be less vulnerable to this than others. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas.
So the definition of full-time is 80% or more, I believe, is what we put it at in terms of what constitutes a full-time position. In terms of total number of state employees who would then be affected by this, it's a little over 60% of all state employees then would fit within that number.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there's been a couple of questions and some discussion in the back here on what kind of discussion did the JAC have when they come to this decision on the freeze and on the other 75 position freeze. There are some questions, was this retaliatory towards the governor or versus why are you giving him such flexibility that he'll cut these kind of services? And at the end of the day, I'll just share with you that as we've gone through there, we think that the governor done a great job this year stepping up. The number of cuts and positions and reductions he made were not easy. And I do know that we wouldn't have made the same cuts the governor made. And I know that you wouldn't make the same cuts that we made. But here we are, and it's kind of the decision of the governor to do that, and we supported him. And in the discussion on the 75 and the freezes, is we felt like we also had to give him some flexibility because we're not trying to retaliate against the things that he's done or the things that he's trying to do. We're just, as a collective body, as a state, as elected officials, both legislative and executive, trying to get to a position that this state moves forward in a fiscally responsible position. We don't hate his guts and liver, and he doesn't hate ours. So we know that we need to make some additional cuts, and we at the same time want to give him some flexibility in how he does that. Might services be cut? I don't know. I look at the impact that these cuts are going to have on services, and they're going to be significant. I just don't know. I think that we're seeing a significant change in what state government provides. We, over the time that I have been in Wyoming since 1980, have provided wonderful programs and services to the citizens of this state. Have they all been essential? Well, no, probably not. And so we're kind of having to make that adjustment to determine that. And so we feel that this gives him some flexibility, and it also continues to get us where we need to be. We know that lives are impacted, not only by those who are impacted by the 75 positions, but also the citizens of the state who would be receiving services. You know, you guys weigh it out. And in the next couple of go-arounds, when you're sitting over here, we'll have these same questions for you when you've made them and when you're serving on JC. But the conversation did take place, and that's some of the thought behind how we got to where we did.
Further discussion on Section 320. Representative Larson?
Well, and just in a conclusion, I would say by the end of the day, I will know the difference between the pink and the silver on these mints. So if anybody really wants to know that, I can share that with them at the end of the day.
Seeing no further discussion on Section 320 and question being called, all those in favor of Section 320 of the budget, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 320 is passed committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 329.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would Nicholas. Move Section 329 and ask your favorable consideration. What this is was the attempt of the Joint Appropriations Committee to address the Title 25 issue. If you go, that's on page 109 of your budget bill, and on the last page 33 of your summary sheet. And what we did is, if the cigarette tax passes the other side of the House, you may recall that the state's share of that cigarette tax is roughly $7 million annually, so $14 million a biennium. So we took $3 million annually and said those funds will be available for the Department of Health to address the shortfall, the projected shortfall in funding for the Title 25 situation. So if there are any questions, I'd call for the question.
Question being called on Section 329. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Section 329 is passed committee of the whole. We're now on to Section 400. If anyone, Chairman Nicholas, closing comments and moving Section 400, if you would.
Yeah. First of all, so there is Section 400 is make this act become immediately. So I'd move for favorable consideration of Section 400 and ask for your favorable consideration and call for the question.
Question being called on Section 400. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. Section 400 is passed committee of the whole. Is there further comments, Chairman Nicholas?
So, yeah, a couple different things. First of all, I want to thank all of you for putting up with us. I mean, we're just getting up here and talk, and you guys have to listen, and so Thank you. But I got to do three different things. First is I want to thank my committee, and let's give them a big hand. I can't tell you the collective of knowledge of the new chair of appropriations, me compared to the previous one, is like David and Goliath. It's just he knows so much more about it. And without my committee, and I just tell you, they worked incredibly hard. We met night after night, but both before the session and during the session, and you witnessed that with the homework that they did and how they presented this. I can tell you that they didn't have quite that type of homework done on the other side, I don't think. I've got the best committee in the House, and just thanks a lot to everybody. Couldn't happen without them. So. And then the next, I'd like to thank the LSO staff, and particularly Don and Don. That's Don Richards and Don from the other side who sat with the Senate. They just worked their tails off for us and a lot of long nights. So thanks a lot for them. Just great folks. So then finally, just what we did was not easy. And when we go in and we're cutting agencies and it may appear we're slightly vindictive or we've got a cross to carry or an axe to grind, and we don't. I mean, we're just doing our very best to get where we need to go to address this structural deficit. And what we have done here today is affecting a lot of people around the state and causing it will be painful. There's just no question about it. And I was like, we could just hope that we'll be a leaner, tougher, better government by our activities. And for anyone that's affected by it, it's just a tough thing to do. And so thank all of you, and for all the folks that are impacted. I just, we'll keep working and do our best to make this a great place to live and do business. So thanks a lot. And finally, I would move for the adoption of the entire budget bill and ask for your favorable consideration.
Question being called on House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 1 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
The reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, with respect to the budget bill, House Bill 0001, Government Appropriations, the committee of the whole took action as follows. Section 57, adopted. Section 60, adopted. Section 63, adopted. Section 66, adopted. Section 67, adopted. Section 79, adopted. Section 70, adopted. Section 77, adopted. Section 80, adopted. Section 81, adopted. Section 85, adopted. Sections 101, 103, 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 126, 127, 128, 129, 130, 131, 132, 133, 134, 135, 136, 137, 138, 139, 140, 141, 142, adopted. Sections 151 through 157, adopted. Section 167, adopted. Section 205, adopted. Section 206, adopted. Section 211, adopted. Section 220, adopted. Section 38, adopted. Section 300, adopted. Section 305, adopted. Section 306, adopted. Section 309, adopted. Section 313, adopted. Section 320, adopted. Section 329, adopted. Section 400, adopted. All actions taken on House Bill 0001 on February 6th and February 7th, 2017, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report in regard to House Bill 1.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed say no. The motion is carried. The entire report has been adopted. Thank you, Chairman Zwanitzer. Okay, members, we have reports from standing committees and messages from the Senate, but we're just going to move those to tomorrow morning because it won't affect our schedule one iota. So we are at that order of business of committee announcements. I'm waiting for the first chairman to the mic. Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Military Affairs, and Highways, will meet upon adjournment in H-37. We'll hear Senate File 38, Veteran License Plate Stickers Appeal Repeal, Senate File 39, Engrossed Military Department Composition, Senate File 40, Engrossed Military Department Record Keeping.
Very nice. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Labor, number 10, will not meet February 8th, Wednesday. Our committee needs to pay attention to the budget and lots of things going on there, so we are not going to meet Wednesday, February 8th. Thank you.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 8th, 2017, at 8:30 a.m. in Jonah Room, H-37. We are meeting at 8:30. Okay. We will hear Senate File 78, Engrossed, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, and Senate File 132, Endow Initiative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any other committee announcements? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee education number 4 will meet Wednesday upon adjournment in Jonah House 38, where we'll hear Senate File 34, Student Digital Information Protection Act, and Senate File 35, Virtual Education.
Thank you. Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning in Jonah H-38 to consider Senate File 126, Engrossed Guides and Outfitters Penalties, and Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Joint Appropriations Committee will meet on adjournment for Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, and Senate File 49, where'd it go? You'll see the title to it. And then we will meet at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in Room L-55 for Senate File 52, Fund Balance Definition, Senate File 136, Energy Science Stipend and Fellowships, and Senate File 147, Livestock Inspection and Investigators.
Thank you. Representative Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow members, after a hard but good day today, like today, I think the perfect way to start our morning tomorrow morning at 6:30 is with a Bible study. So I'm inviting all of you to come to Bible study, room L51 at 6:30. We'll have a breakfast. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 8th, 2017.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed. Motion carries. The House is adjourned until Wednesday, February 8th at 10 a.m.